Hey everybody, episode number 108, Hellebass Bass Fishing Podcast. This week, super cool guest, OG YouTube content creator Mikey Balls. And we're talking all things spring bass fishing, some bass boat talk, bunch of other stuff, answer a bunch of questions. If you guys want to join the actual live streams on Wednesday nights, hop on over to the YouTube channel. Otherwise, hey, we love you on the podcast MP3 as well. If you want to leave us a thumbs up and a review over here, that would be awesome. But otherwise, let's get to it and enjoy the episode. This week, the Hellebass Bass Fishing Podcast is brought to you by Arsenal Fishing. Arsenal Fishing offers premium custom-made performance apparel and tackle. Arsenal delivers a wide variety of custom-designed baits, accessories, and tools, along with unique utilitarian apparel for all outdoor enthusiasts. As part of their support, you can use code HELLEBASS15 to save 15% on all purchases at arsenalfishing.com to support the show. Now let's get back to helping you catch more bass and suck less. What's up, everybody? Hellebass Live on a Wednesday night. We got quite the streak going. We've been hitting our Wednesdays with some consistency, which is awesome. Good to see a bunch of you in here already. See White Whale, Scott, Kent, Ron, Dax, whole bunch of familiar faces. White. So we'll have a good guest. We started to do a little warm up before the show. Had a little technical difficulties, but I have confidence our guest will figure this out. He's got some computer savvy. Tim Maynard, what's going on? Bright and early, showing up. Jack Rohr, what's up? Yeah, so we're gonna be talking to our guests about spring fishing here. And speak of it, must have heard his ears ringing. Let's add him to the show here. What's up, Mikey?
What are you doing at all, man?
Oh, just living the dream, trying to stay warm here in Minnesota.
How cold is it up there?
Today was like a high of 43, maybe?
Is that kind of cold seasonally, or is that standard?
It's the winter just won't let go. Like, it's...
Yeah, we had the same problem down here.
So if you go like 3 hours north of me, they still have almost 2 feet of ice.
Really?
Yeah, like bad deal. Like up in northern Minnesota, it's going to be touch and go whether the lakes will be open for like the Wally opener on Mother's Day weekend.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because everything's kind of behind. At least like down here, we're like, I'm in Alabama right now. We're like 2 weeks behind. I was in Florida like this.
A little bit of lag on Mikey's end. We'll see if it comes around here. We're going to talk about that wind tonight, Matt, for sure. Wind is a problem. I'm actually just going to bop Mikey down to the studio there. Oh, there, maybe to come back. That'll work. All right. I know you froze up for a second.
That's weird because I'm on Google Fiber, dude.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going on. But yeah, I was just saying everything's been behind, man. So it's understandable. What's weird is our fish still spawn like pretty quick. Like they kind of like popped, at least down here in Alabama, they popped and they got done and got out, dude.
Yeah, we just I had my first tournament of the year last weekend on the river, which there's only a few places we can fish because we have seasons up here.
Right.
But Mississippi's open and 45 to 46 degree water, main river. Is all we had, and like I think ice just came off the river like 3 weeks ago, so it's been slow. Last year, same weekend, it was mid 50s, so.
And that makes that much of a difference up there. I'm sure it's very marginal, like small differences in temperatures really change.
And I think we had 46 degree water temp surface, but I think you know like in the river channel, it was probably frozen, like 40, dude. Right? Like. There was fish that were just, they hadn't even like tried to get even. So even though a few backwaters and shallow stuff was starting to get close to 50, I think the fish that were in their wintering holes were still sitting down there in 40 degree water, you know, not knowing that they should be getting going.
Yeah, because not much has changed. Yeah.
Right.
And then wind, you guys got wind? Because, like, wind, like, I don't know if it's been below 20 mile hour winds in a month up here.
It has blown pretty hard. It actually laid down this past week, but it has been blowing, dude. I was on Lanier, like, what was it, 2.5-3 weeks ago, and it was ripping, dude. Like, ripping. And Lanier's got all these little, like, pockets and channels, and you literally could not hide from it, dude, whatsoever. Catching them on a buzzbait in 49-degree water, that's kind of badass, dude.
He's in Nebraska, so he's, like, Kansas. So he said last week was 49, now this week, buzzbait.
That's crazy.
Yeah, there were a lot of people fishing Lake Pepin, which is part of the river. And speaking of the wind, like, we could not, like, it just would find you. Like, you could not get out of it. Like, it was a southwest wind, and you'd get in the southwest corner of the lake, and it would be coming out of the north somehow. It's like, it was just...
It does that swirly bird crap, dude. Like, it's horrible.
Well, if you had 53-degree water... It was only on the very surface, Brian, because it wasn't anywhere near that warm. Because if it was really 53, you would have caught some fish there, Brian. Yeah, so that was my Friday was my first. I got my, this weekend's the first day I got out, so, and had a tournament on Sunday.
Do you do any ice fishing?
I try not to.
I try not to.
not since college.
I used to ice fish a bit when I lived up there, but that was more of like an excuse to drink beer and freaking stay out on the ice all night and like stare at the moon and catch freaking crappie.
Are you originally from like Wisconsin or?
Yeah, I'm originally from Wisconsin. From Southern
where in Wisconsin?
Southern Wisconsin, just north of Milwaukee.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you fish Winnaconee, Winnebago?
I was actually out there like twice, I think, in my entire life. I nearly knocked off. My dad freaking bought me a boat when I was a kid, like in high school, and I tried to do some guiding in that, and it was a little like 15.5-foot winner, and I thought I was some fancy stuff, dude. Mm-hmm. And that thing could go like freaking 40-50 miles an hour. It's pretty quick back in the day, but I almost knocked a lower unit off of it on Winnaconee. You know how the rocks come up in between there and like Butamore and all that? And yeah, dude, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. You know, I was a stupid kid, and I almost knocked the whole shebang off that thing, which would have been bad.
Yeah, actually it's one of the most unique fisheries we have up here. It's a really cool tournament venue. You know, when you take Bago, Winnaconee, Butamore, those lakes, then you got the Wolf and the Fox. It's actually a really, cool tournament. It's challenging. It's
big water too.
Yeah. But you can do so many things, and it's a really interesting fishery.
Yeah. You know, I do remember that. Like, I didn't fish out there much, but there's a lot of hard cover. And then in some portions of the lake, or it was in some of the lakes, there's a lot of vegetation. There's a lot of pads in that. And really, you can go from one to the other very quickly. It's kind of, and it's broad and it's shallow. You know, a lot of the lakes up there are like, they fish pretty deep. You fish your grass lines, your weed lines, or whatever you want to call them. And usually that's 8 to 12, 8 to 15, you know. Up there, it's a lot of 5 to 6 foot, you know, and a lot of flats, dude.
Yeah. Well, glad you could make it, Jesse. Awesome.
You know where I live up there? I went up to visit my little brother up there. He lives in Madison, still up in Wisconsin. And I went and fished Green Lake up there.
Yeah.
That was badass, dude. I haven't been there since I was a kid, and I think I went there once when I was a kid, but that place, it was so cool. It reminded me a little bit of Smith Lake down here in Alabama where I'm at, but like chock full of smallmouth. There's some grass, and the smallmouth relate to the grass, which was fun, but that place is cool, dude, and there's some bigs. I saw some smallies I could not catch just swimming around in front of me before I had active tarpon in that. I don't know. I got to go back up there because that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that lake has them. I've seen the tournament results. I have not fished it, but
there's big for an inland lake, you know, without going into like, you know, Green Bay and fishing the Great Lakes and that, like that's your best shot at catching like a 5 to 6 pound smallmouth, I would say, unless you go way up north, I guess. Yeah, should I tell you what the temperature was here today? It was like 74 degrees.
Yeah, this is a good this I remember this like growing up in Minnesota and Wisconsin, like when we talked about vegetation, we'd say cabbage, we'd say coontail, we would say milfoil. You go down south, it's just grass.
Grass, boy.
Just grass. I was just fishing the grass. I just got up in that grass and
Well, and it's funny too, because I can always tell when I lived in Florida, down in South Florida, a lot of guys will come down there for to become snowbirds and that kind of deal, you know. And it was funny because I'd be at the lake and there's a lot of diversity of people, like accents and stuff. So you can kind of tell where people are from, but there's also sort of this melded kind of universal accent. So sometimes you can't pick up on it. But I'd be like shooting the breeze with some dude at the ramp and he'd go, yeah, I caught him on the weed lines over there, you know. Like, I know where you're from, bro.
Are you throwing a jig worm, bud?
Yeah, right. Speaking of that, so you're in Minnesota.
Yeah.
I fished in Minnesota, I think, once. We went up there for summer vacation once. My little brother had a hockey, hockey camp he went to. And sure. We fished a place, are you familiar? I think it's called Detroit Lakes.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, that place was awesome. We're up there in July, dude. I could see like fours and fives swimming. The water was gin clear and there'd be like reed heads and stuff. You could see them swimming back and forth. And since it was July, like it stays light up there till like 9:30 at night, yeah. Dude. It's crazy.
Yeah. And you probably weren't, I don't know. I've not heard about like Detroit Lake itself being good, but all the little lakes around it are really
good. That's where we were on like a chain or something. Yeah. And, like we stayed in some cat. It was beautiful though, dude. And there were banks like, and it's cool. Cause it, to an extent, like I think Minnesota is kind of like Wisconsin. Like a lot of guys just like scoff their head at bass fishing. You know, they go out, they fish for walleye, they fish for muskie, but especially when you get further north, like the bass are kind of untouched, dude. So they're fun to catch, man.
Yeah, there's so much. I mean, you'll spoil yourself. Like that's the biggest adjustment when you come from Minnesota, Wisconsin. So when you go to like, you go down fishing open or team championship or something like that, it's like, prepare yourself that like 8 bites is a good day when you go down south, you know, outside of a few times of the year when it can be really good. And certain, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, like when Kentucky with ledges and stuff, when they're good and you know, you can blast them. Right. But the majority of the year, handful of bites, that's what you're fishing for. And up here, like, if you're not culling all day, you're going to get your teeth kicked in most of the time.
Exactly. You know what I mean? Like, they're more aggressive. But, I mean, I guess that's the price you pay for or not the price. It's karma coming back. Because
the trade-off for not fishing for 6 months and ice,
Exactly. Except when I lived up there, I was such a fiend, dude. Like, I could ice fish a couple times, and then it got old, dude. Like, it was just like, dude, there's a hole. I'm dipping something into it, whatever, you know. But we used to go – there was a power plant lake out in central Wisconsin. I have no idea what it was called, but they would generate the 55 degrees. And there were hybrids. There were smallmouth. There were some largemouth in there. And we'd drive 5 hours to go bank fish this power plant or whatever. And it would be like – 30, 15 degrees outside. I gotta watch my mouth. Our stuff's all freezing, you know what I mean? And dude, like the water's open and the bass are biting because it was all like 55, like year round kind of deal. But that was the only reprieve we would get from winter.
Yeah. We had a, I can talk about it now, but so up in Grand Rapids, which is about 3 hours north of me, there was a power plant that ran pretty warm into the river, Mississippi River, which went into Pokegama. And we could go up there and throw swim baits in the dead of winter.
Yeah.
And catch bigs from the bank.
That's cool.
Just an amazing bite, like HUDs and, you know, mm-hmm. that type of stuff. And just, and then if you weren't catching a 4 to 6 pound bass, you were catching 20 to 30 inch pike.
That's fun, dude.
Until the pike eats your Huddleston and then you're pissed.
Yeah. That's one thing I don't miss from up there, dude, is like the $20 crankbait going goodbye, dude. Just, and then your line's just cut. You're like, yeah, I know exactly what happened right there.
This sums it up perfect right here. Ice fishing. Been there, done that. I got the t-shirt.
Right.
I did it in college.
Back in the day, it was fun. I didn't have a bunch of electronics, you know, back then. But I had a neighbor who was the coolest dude, and he taught me how to fish a Vexlar for a crappie in the middle of the night and how to, like, watch him come up. And that was fun, dude. That was kind of entertaining because you'd actually, like, vertical fish him, you know, like, suspended and that. And they'd come in for, like, 2 hours at, like, 1 a.m. You'd catch the piss out of them, and then you were done. But that was kind of cool.
But, yeah, on the Iowa-Minnesota border, took 20 pounds to win Okoboji. My tournament.
A great name for a lake. I thought he misspelled Okeechobee for a minute there.
Yeah. My tournament only took 15 pounds to win. It was stingy. The river was, I think we caught eight keepers and two shorts all day.
Is that a mixed bag or all largemouth?
We had all smallies. The winners had all largemouth. We had all smallies. We had 14 pounds. But I don't know.
That's fun, though. I think whenever you're catching, like, say, like 12 to 16 pounds or so, 13 to 16, like, that's a fun day, dude. Like, yeah. Anywhere.
If we, it would have been a lot more fun if we caught 20 to get there instead of just, like, yeah, you know what I mean? Exactly. Like,
but that's why, you know, you keep going back, dude.
Yeah, but we caught like
20 today too. But we caught 2 4-pound smallmouth, like a 3-pound smallmouth, and then rats, dude, and it was a grind.
Yeah, we pulled up to our first spot. Well, hopefully, I have the tournament video up this weekend. But like, caught a limit, culled 2 times, didn't catch anything for 6.5 hours. Culled once at the end of the day.
Ouch! Ouch! It's, you know, dude, I'm not going to lie. It's kind of a grind down here because so we're post-spawn for the most part. You know, you get some random, like May 15th is a full moon. We'll probably get like a little wave of fish coming up, but the main wave's done. But everything's post-spawn. And if you're not out there at the crack ass of dawn, dude, like you miss the shad spawn. Yeah. And that's the big game right now. And for like the next week and a half, you got to play the shad spawn because everything after that is a bonus, dude. It's a grind.
Yeah, because then fish gorge themselves, right? For like,
yeah, they go crazy and they're set up for it. They know it's going on. You know, it's, I don't know. It's so weird how they know it. Like they're so keyed into it. But the trick is, in about a week, we're gonna have some stable weather. Water's gonna clear out, and all of a sudden, like that, before you even expect it, there's gonna be fish offshore. Like you think they're still shallow, you think they're still up, and then all of a sudden you go scan something in 15 to 20 feet, and they're lined up on the bottom. And it's the best time because it's before everybody gets out there, before they get all beat up, and you can kind of get those virgin fish that are really chomping.
Yeah, that's one thing I've never – I've seen – when I was on Gunnersville, I saw a little bit of, like, shad activity. Like, they were – but there wasn't a bite there, so I've never gotten – I don't fish down south a ton. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's only a limited time, but I've never been on the shad spawn. And it's weird. The Mississippi River has shad. Redfin shad.
Yeah.
And I talk to my buddies that live in La Crosse,
mm-hmm.
fish it every day, you know, like, and they've never seen a shad spawn on the river.
How does that water hit like 65, 70 degrees at some point during the year?
Oh yeah. I mean, Mississippi River gets up to 80 degrees. Like,
I wonder if it's a delayed deal or something like it. Because usually it's like 65 to 71, 72, something like that. And then it plays with the full moon a bit. But I don't know.
Unless they just do it in a really weird area or that they can get so far back.
That actually could be. As long as it's a hard spot, they can do it dirt shallow, dude.
I don't know. I don't know. Like, I've asked them, and they're like, it's weird. Like, I don't know. It's like they must do it in some really weird area or they do it subsurface, or they, you know, maybe they, but it's not like you see on TV where it's,
yeah,
like,
it's not super obvious. You know, I've seen them do it subsurface. To be honest with you, that's what was happening. Where did I go? Wilson. There weren't like, they were below, and it was crazy because the shadow actually followed my chatterbait back, and then there'd be a bass with it. But it was all, I could see it happening on my active target because there were balls of bait, you know, like doing it right below the surface, 2-3 foot below, but just not up on top getting crushed in that, but I could see him chasing back and forth.
Yeah, I have fished Lake of the Woods for walleyes. I've never fished it for bass. There are certain parts of it that have good bass fishing, but they're not anywhere near where I fish for walleyes. Somebody else, so critic says, was my tournament angler or co-angler? He is also an angler. So my buddy Bankston, Brian Bankston, because I don't have a boat right now. I had to get a buddy that had a boat to go fishing because I'm still waiting on mine. So he's a guy that fishes as a boater as well. So we were kind of his boat. We were kind of co-boating. And that's co-boating. What it was, the setup.
I like that.
It was funny. We, it was so windy. Like, it was blowing sustained 20 gusts, 30 to 40,
Jesus. Just
40 degrees outside. Like, brutal. And every keeper we weighed was caught off the back deck. Like, the guy that was in the back concentrating on the fishing and not fighting the boat was the guy that was catching all the fish. So we were taking turns.
Like, were you guys spot locked or were you guys running a bank?
A little of both. It was Most, I think most of the fish came with the spot lock on.
Yeah. That's almost the only way to fish. It's funny you say that because I was talking about Lanier before. And when we were over there, it was only like 3 days, but it blew 20 to 30, like you said, with like crazy gusts. It wasn't quite as cold, but we were trying to fish these main lake humps, and really to cast into the wind and try to run your active target on it, it was impossible. So you literally had to set up. So you were back casting off the back of the deck, and we just set up on the back and both of us go stand back there so you could cast. We're throwing wacky rigs in 30 foot, dude. So you had to, with like a little 16th ounce deal, like a Nico rig. And in order to like actually get it down to the brush and get it down to that, like you had to make this bomb ass cast, dude. And you couldn't do that into the wind, you know? Yeah. So we would just sit in the back and like no electronics, basically fishing blind, dude.
Yeah. For us, it was all about jerk baits.
That's right. Water temp. Makes sense.
And I had to throw the, what ended up being, we got every single fish on a, Jackal Rearrange 110 medium runner.
How does that thing cast?
How's that?
How does that thing cast?
That thing, I was just going to bring that up. This thing casts amazing. Yeah. Like, there was another boat throwing mega bass jerk baits on the same spot. And my partner started the day with a mega bass.
Yeah.
And this thing with the weight transfer in it just would cut through that wind.
Exactly.
And I was making the cast and getting it down. And then, so I had two of them tied on, and then he ended up switching to it, and he caught the big one on it late. But I don't really like jerkbaits. It's not my favorite way to fish, but this was the deal. Like, there was four people throwing jerkbaits at the beginning of the morning, and I was the only one catching them because the only one that could, like, get it to where the fish were. So.
Well, that's kind of the crap part about that mega bass, dude. It gets bites, and it does outfish most jerkbaits, but casting it into the wind, dude, is practically impossible. Like, the thing just doesn't throw very well at all.
Yeah, and the nice thing about the Rearrange, it's a good jerkbait, gets bit, casts really well. But the best part, in my opinion, is that it's only $15.
Yeah,
it doesn't cost $24. Like,
yeah, right.
The bad part is that they're typically out of stock.
Yeah.
Like,
have you ever recommend
if you're looking for a good jerk bait that doesn't cost $25, this is worth checking out.
Have you ever thrown that Nishine?
The Nishine?
Yeah.
No, I haven't. Nope.
You need to check that out, dude. It runs a little bit bigger. I think it's like a 115.
Yep.
But it's got this crazy little weight dangle off the front hook that you can cut down. And that joker, you can slang that thing. And I fished it in Florida a bunch and then around here on Smith. And sometimes you can get it to kind of just slow sink, you know, like ever so slowly, dude. And they get stupid with it. Like, it's probably when the water is maybe a hair warmer, like low 50s, you know. But there's something about that just very, just inch by inch sink, dude. And they crush it. And it's a little bit bigger, too. I think at least like our spots and smallmouth, I found, you know how they kind of like a bigger profile thing and they swat at it?
Yeah.
It seemed to get some pretty good bites from the smallmouth and the spots, like swatting bites kind of thing, just something different.
And they're good looking baits too. Like
they are. And they twitch well, dude. For my buddy Jacob Wall, he fishes the MLF and he's down here. He lives in Gunnersville now. He actually put me onto it. I didn't figure it out. I was throwing a freaking 110 mega bass and his ass was schooling me. And I'm like, dude, like, we're kind of doing the same thing here. Tell me a little more. And he kind of showed me the bait and how he's fishing it and that. And it was surprising too, because when he actually showed it to me the first time, we were in like gin clear water, dude. Like easy, well, gin clear for us, like 5 to 10 foot visibility, very like clean, cold. And that bigger profile was killing it, dude. I think, I don't know, maybe just something different. Gunnersville renowned for that, the something different. It'll last for like a year, maybe 6 months, and then it's over. Like, they've seen it, everybody throws it, and it's done. Time to find a new toy.
Yeah, and it says it weighs 3/4 ounce and goes to 6 feet, so it's something you can cast for sure.
Yeah, you can slang it. And the thing I played with it, it doesn't run like, you know, like a plus one. I think that your Jackal looked like it was more like a plus one, like a 6 to 8 or something, or 5 to 8. So with that Nishine, with that little weight transfer, I can sink it down a little bit more. So I'll fish it that deep, but I have to, you know, slang it, let it give it up to like a 2000 count or something like that, and then work it back, and it runs those depths, but it does run a bit shallower than like a 110 plus one.
I throw my jerk baits on casting rods.
Yeah.
I use a 704 CB, yeah. Dobbins rod. Like I know some people it works, but like it wears my arm. I mean, it's already like wears my arm enough throwing on a bait caster on a spinning rod. The mechanics of it just like,
yeah.
I'm like 10 casts. I'm like, I can't do it.
I've had issues too. Like I'll throw the little tiny ones. Like I think they're like the little 3-inch mega bass, you know, on a spinning rod. But mm-hmm. sometimes, dude, when you're doing that snapping, you get that slack in your spinning rod, and it'll wrap your bail every once in a while, dude. Perfect. And you'll go to reel and that joker will lock up, and it's kind of, and it's usually at the worst time, you know, like right when your rod's loading up.
Yeah. The two colors, Rego was the Secret Shad 2, which is kind of like a Table Rock Shad. No, actually that's the wrong one. Sorry. That's the Burgundy. No, this one, this Table Rock Shad, but what they call it, Secret Shad 2. Little bit of stain on the Mississippi River, so you got purple and chartreuse. And then the one that the big one ate was this Hu Hasu.
Wakasaki.
Similar to the Megabass Wakasaki, right? Yeah.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. Just not the green back, I guess. It's more of a blue back.
Yeah. So nothing crazy. Pretty standard colors.
What's the watercolor like on the Mississippi?
I think most of where we were, you probably couldn't see more than a foot to foot and a half.
Really? And you're still catching on a jerkbait like that?
Yeah. It's probably a little cleaner, but with all the wind, I think there was just so much
sediment coming up and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess it was the Dobbins 704 CB crankbait rod, the graphite version, not the glass version. And then I got an older 50E.
You naughty dog.
Those jerk baits pretty well.
Yeah. Best reels ever made, dude.
But here's the funny part. Laziness. I had 15-pound big game from when I fished a tournament in Louisiana last November, and I was too lazy to turn it out. So I was throwing on 15-pound big game instead of like 12-pound flora, which is what I normally would do.
Yeah.
All right. Look at that guy. He's got a sharp eye. I have not tried the World Minnow yet. Have you tried the World Minnow?
No. I've actually heard of it, though. I heard somebody talking about it. It's that 115. So that's becoming kind of a thing, too. They're making some like bigger profile ones. I tried that Berkeley. Is it the Stunna?
Stunna? I haven't thrown it yet. No, nope.
That one's pretty solid. I mean, it fishes a lot like a mega bass, like it's kind of like a cheap mega bass, but I like the price point on it, and the finishes are good.
I've got plenty of jerk baits, and I don't throw them that much in the window. I don't know, like, I know people throw jerk baits year round, especially down south, but most of our lakes don't have a ton of shad in them. And I know I can catch bass on jerk baits year round, but it falls off for me, and it's not something I really want to do.
Yeah,
so I don't throw it a lot in the summer. Cool. So I saw a comment earlier that somebody I wanted to circle back at here. Taylor says, you're both rocking new boats. Well, I'm actually not rocking a new boat yet.
Your boat?
I have one. It should be here in like 2 or 3 weeks.
What'd you get?
We haven't talked about that yet. Oh. The members know. I did it in the member stream. I shared that, but not on the main channel yet.
Well, let me ask you this. Are you excited about it?
I am excited about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, first new boat, or have you ever had a new
boat? It's actually my first brand new boat. Yeah.
Really? So you're in the same boat that I am, or in the same, not, I'm not saying it's the same boat, but you're in the same situation I'm in too.
Which you unveiled yours, what, 2-3 weeks ago on your channel?
Yeah. I revealed it like 2-3 weeks ago. I got a Nitro Z20. 250 Merc on the back. Oh, I'm super stoked about it. Mm-hmm. Like I'm going to shoot a final walkthrough video probably in a couple weeks, but I always have to frame up my excitement because like, this is fancy to me, you know, like I've been fishing, I fished out of a tin boat. I fished out of a rental John boat. Right. I had a 2006 Triton. I had the Triton that I won, the 2017 TRX 189. So I've had a lot of different kinds and styles of boats, but I never had like a new, fancy, like fresh, never.
Put the first scratch in it.
So it, to me, it's mind blowing. But like honest kind of read on it, I really like the way it's laid out. I know a lot of people kind of talk some smack about the nitros, but at least in my opinion, it's very intuitively organized, which is really important to me because I have a lot of tackle that I lug around. And especially, it's maybe not even the boat, but you know, the new four strokes, they don't take any oil. So your motor well's got a lot more space in it, dude. So I actually put five batteries back there because we're running all these electronics. And frankly, there's not the juice to run all this jazz. So I put a fifth battery back there, another lithium to run my graphs and that. But it's pretty badass, dude. I'm not going to lie. I got three HDS 12s on the front. I got double graph set up at the bow, two more 12s. I love the casting deck space. I was out with my buddy who's been out on the Triton a whole bunch. And instead of us being like, you know, hey, bro, you know, you want to touch my bottom kind of thing, all snuggled up together. Like we have space to kind of move around and work. I'm not stepping on the dog all the time, which is awesome. So, and it's fast, dude. At Joker, the fastest I went was today, and I hit 72. And nice. I frankly think I'm not a speed guy, but I kind of want to know what she can do. I think I can knock another 2 or 3 miles an hour, and that's fully loaded with full tank of gas, like 27 freaking rods in my rod locker and the whole deal. So I'm pretty happy with it, dude.
Yeah, that's cool. I feel like it's a progression, right? Because like you're gonna do like you did your first like. Well, you kind of did your search, right?
Yeah.
And then you kind of like, I forgot it. Like, this is my first, like, right, Christmas morning, like, excitement, right? And then it's like, I'm going to fish out of it for 3 weeks or a month and then tell you what I really think about it.
Exactly. And, dude, there's a lot of – this is, like, first world problems, but there's a lot of tweaking. Like, you get any used boat, and, like, granted, it might not be tweaked the way you want it, but, like, somebody fished in it, it got used, it got kind of broken in, and, like – sort of a fishing style to it. When you get a new boat like this, especially if it's a brand or a boat style that you never used, like there's all this tweaking stuff. Like, cause I'm super OCD anal about how I want stuff organized, where I think it should be, where like, I don't know, just like little stupid stuff. And the electronics, for as much as like, they're a lot easier to use than they used to be, they're always a headache, dude. Like getting everything, you know, networked out right. And I wanted to get to a point where it's like, I know exactly what's in this boat, how it's laid out, how it feels, how it rides, what happens when I hit 2 foot waves, how I feel up in the front, you know, I want to kind of bring an honest perspective to it, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm coming from a 2005 Basscat Pantera. So
that's a good boat, dude.
A great boat, but like for that time period, right? Like, it's pretty narrow. I mean, like the decks are narrower, you know what I mean? Like you're in the perch of the bow. So like in a Basscat anyways, like you're like, you're standing on a circle like this big when your foot's on the foam motor and your rods are like right here. It's like, it's cozy.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Caught a lot of fish, had a lot of success out of it. And then like this weekend we fished out of Banger's boat and that was a 21 PHX, which is, it's a nice boat.
is that the one with the higher gunnels on it?
It's the bigger water. Yeah.
Yeah. Bigger water. That's what my buddy, do you know Rob Matsura by chance? He's one of the camera guys.
I mean, I know of him. I don't know him.
He's literally crashing in the other room of my house because they just filmed the Pickwick tournament. He has that PHX, the 21. I did a walkthrough of his, dude. And that's a sweet rig. The storage on that thing is stupid, dude. Like you can put a freaking household of stuff in there, man.
It was massive. It was nice having it in my garage for a few days, getting ready for the tournament. So
you should have just drove away. You should have come down south. You'd been like, hey, bro, I'd take a trip. You had to roll out.
But cool. Michael says he misses your tin boat.
I miss my tin boat too. I love that thing. I had that Tracker 175. And dude, I put that thing on my Okeechobee in places it did not belong and caught a lot of big fish on it. Not going to lie, man, like if you're on a budget and you need a boat, like a tin boat's a great way to go. Like the entry level, I mean, the Trackers aren't the highest quality, but they're solid boats and it's super easy to mod a tin boat, you know, and it's a great entry level, especially if you're fishing like medium to small water, I mean, you really don't need, and you're not traveling a bunch and all that, you really don't need all that boat, dude. If you can do 35, 45 mile an hour, and you can put, you got a place for your rods, you can deck it out with electronics, I mean, you don't need that much. I used to have a 24 volt trolling motor in that in that 175, which was what, 17 and a half. And like, dude, I could go through hydrilla mats. Like I could get through all the grass, get super like draft really shallow. It's a good boat, dude.
Yeah. I have an 80 pound on my cat.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, especially if you live up Minnesota, Wisconsin, 99% of the lakes, you know, an 18 to 19 foot Vexus or Tracker, yep, or yep, whatever. Crestliner, yeah, or whatever. It's perfect. Like you're going to, all you need, as long as you're not on leech when it's blowing 30.
Well, and you know what guys forget too? I'm a big fan of fishing smaller lakes, maybe not smaller, but like you're off the road lakes, maybe your non-tournament lakes, your less frequented lakes. And a lot of times they got crap boat ramps, dude. So like if you don't have four-wheel drive, or even if you do, you can get in some places where guys really kind of shade away from putting in a 20 and 21-foot boat, dude. And even with docks and stuff, I know in Wisconsin, we fished a lot of docks. There's a lot of little creepy sneak-arounds that I could get into with like a little tin boat versus some big old glass boat trying to wedge around getting the back end of a dock and all that.
I look forward to getting stuck trying to do that in the new boat. I'm sure I'll still drive it like it's a 19 footer.
You know, I'm not going to lie. I don't want to overboost the nitro, but like one thing I do like about the nitro is I was super. So my 189 was 18 foot six, I think, with a 150. It had a wide beam, 94 inch beam. So it was more like your 20 or your 19 foot style boat beam. But I was concerned with the sort of the responsiveness, you know, because I'm used to this smaller boat. I've been in more of a smaller boat. So like trailering and then maybe getting around docks or even like turning and stuff. So that nitro comes in at 20 foot two. It trailers super easy. Mm-hmm. And it's nice because it really is responsive. Like I would always, I don't know about you, but a lot of times these smaller boat ramps I put in, I'll have to like drive the boat, make a 45 to get on the trailer. And I really thought I'd be missing that turn a lot with that 20 foot boat. And the thing is super responsive. Like it cuts really well, like idling and all that. Don't just, I don't know, just plosh around, I guess you could say. So I've been really happy about that. I think anything bigger, at least for me, than 20, maybe 20 foot one or 20 foot two is, would be too much. I think ideally a 19 foot boat is like the perfect boat personally. If you fish alone, mostly like that's, you get speed, you get range, but at the same time, your gas mileage and your travel mileage, your highway mileage is pretty solid.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of the like 19, six to 20, exactly, like five or whatever.
That's, yeah,
like, let's see here. My Austin wants to know, what's your experience on the Coosa? You fish the Coosa River at all?
Big zero.
Yeah?
Yeah, I haven't been down there. My buddy was busting my balls about that today. He's like, you gone to the Coosa yet? I'm like, no, dude. I've barely fished around where I live. I can't, like, I'm always on the road freaking working and doing stuff. But I need to get down there. All these guys talk about around here is, like, that Coosa River spot. Like, the hardest fighting, best fighting fish that you can find from a spotted bass standpoint.
Yeah, actually, I spent 4 or 5 hours on Logan Martin one time. I was fishing a regional tournament on Gunnersville. Didn't make the cut, but my roommate did. So I had like a morning like to do nothing, you know, mm-hmm, to watch him do the weigh-in. And me and another buddy, Steve, we went down there and just on a whim, drove down there, you know, caught some fish on shaky heads. And, you know, just it was like, probably like 2 weeks ago this time, like,
right,
6 years ago, early to middle April. And then we just got on a jerkbait by just running like clay gravel points. And
yeah,
it was fun. I mean, like you just be like, and like, it would be like you jerk and all of a sudden your rod would go whack the other way. I mean, they would just hammer that. And like, yeah, like if the fish up north ate jerkbaits like this, I'd be a bigger fan of fishing jerkbaits. Like they was savage.
Oh my God. I like that, dude. I'm not gonna lie. Like, I need to stay diverse for the channel, you know. But I'm very, what would you call it? I get into like these like extremist kind of modes, and one of the modes that I've sort of stumbled into up here is chasing spots. they're so much fun because they're aggressive, but they also set up in a way that I love to fish. I love fishing for suspended fish and structure oriented fish. And them spots, dude, they do some fun stuff, and you can fish such a cool range of baits for them, from finesse to sort of maybe ledge oriented, but finesse style baits, like little hair jigs. And then you can go up to like your bigger swim baits, you know, your glides and that. But they're such a cool species to sort of target and track down. Like I've really fallen in love with Lanier. I go there every year. And granted, Lanier is probably one of the best spotted bass fisheries in the United States, much less the Southeast. But they just set up in a way on Lanier between the brush, the blow throughs and things like that, in ways that I love to catch them, dude. And they're so much fun to walk on, like forward facing sonar, like active target. It's the perfect tool for spotted bass because they're always, you know, just above the bottom. And it, I don't know, it's, I love me some spots. I could shoot a lot of spotted bass videos, but I think people might get bored.
Yeah, it's they're cool, but at some point, like if you live in certain parts of the country where they don't exist, you start to not relate.
Exactly. Yeah, you disconnect, and that's one thing I don't want to happen, because you gotta try to engage with people, and it keeps you dimensional too, because I wouldn't be able to catch spots if I hadn't done a lot of the offshore fishing I did in Florida for largemouth. You know, I wouldn't know some of these little things that I know. So it all sort of complements, you know, the each species techniques and that, you know, to be well rounded. And it's just fun, dude. If we love catching bass, we love catching all kinds of bass. It doesn't matter what kind.
Yeah, absolutely. I should remember to thank Arsenal Fishing for supporting the channel and the stream. Got to make sure we get that out of the way. It's good to have
you. Those guys are super cool. The Omnia guys? Yeah. Oh, you're talking about Arsenal. I see
both of them. No, yeah, both of them.
I actually talked to the Omnia guys for some gambler stuff. Like, God, it was like a year or two ago. They are a cool group of dudes, man. Super chill. Super chill. But they have Minnesota accents, so they're fun to talk to.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people that watch this channel get a lot of their tackle from Omnia, that's for sure.
Well, they got that cool platform, right? Where like there's different like facts about the lakes, different reports, different baits that work in certain areas. It's good information, especially for somebody like trying a new lake or maybe fishing. What really is important for fishing in a region you're not used to fishing. Yep. I found that a lot when I got to Alabama. Like I had this whole arsenal of baits for fishing Florida, offshore, fishing grass and that. And I get to Alabama and I'm like, whoa, dude, I got to go shopping. But I don't know what the hell to buy, you know? So when you can kind of get that starting point of these are kind of like the baseline lures, these are the depths and sort of the water columns you're going to need to fish depending on the technique, and you kind of get that starting point, it really helps you to sort of buy tackle smartly. I don't know if there's such a thing as buying tackle smartly, because you end up always buying way too much, but it gives you a good jumping off point.
Yeah. And Jabe, good point. The handwritten note's a nice touch. Until they start knowing personal facts about your life and including them in the notes because you order too many times.
We're watching you through your window right now. Enjoy that jerk bait, buddy.
Jay says, what's the best bait all time in Florida and why is it a June bug fat ace?
That's true. I think that's kind of true anywhere, though. It might not be that color. Right. But frankly, like a stick bait above 60 degrees in any place in the United States, it might not be the game winner, but it's the bite getter, dude. Like you can't beat in that. Well, that's the other thing too. You can do a million freaking things with it. If there's one soft plastic that's so diverse, like you can wacky rig it, you can shaky head it, you can drag it on a freaking Carolina rig, you can cut it in half, put it on a Ned. Like there's 400 things you can do with it. Whereas like a ribbon tail, a swim bait, they're somewhat one dimensional. Like a swim bait, you can buzz on the top and you can fish on a lead head, but That freaking stick bait, dude, is it's just you can have one bag and do a lot with it. So yeah, so probably a stick bait. The other one, it's just tough to beat that chatterbait down there. It runs so clean through the grass. You can fish it in a variety of water columns. You can put it on braid. You can put it on furrow. Like it's sort of like the spinner bait of the 70s and 80s of Florida. You know, that used to be such a big bait, the spinner bait down there, until the chatterbait showed up. And you know, the old timers still throw that spinner bait and actually still catches them a whole bunch. But that chatter bait is just, It's a big bite getter, and it's a four-wheel drive deal. Like, you can throw it in a lot of stuff you didn't think you could throw it in, and it runs clean. Or you can freaking rip it off, you know, and clean it off.
Yeah, that's hard to beat the chatterbait. It's like, is it going to fade? Is it going to, I don't know. Like, I feel like they're getting enough variations out there now that it's, you know, different. It's becoming more like the spinnerbait. Like, there's getting more blade combinations, more blade sizes, more trailers, more things you can do to keep it fresh. And
I'll tell you what, I'm on a kick playing with like finessey stuff. I like that. I'm becoming kind of a noodle dick angler to an extent, which is ironic because I also flip like an ounce and a half or throw like an 8-inch freaking hollow body. But I tried out that new Chatterbait Mini, and that's a bad mama jama right there. And I was actually using it to skip docks around here. And what's kind of cool with it is, since it's a smaller blade and a smaller profile, the 3/8 runs like what a 1/2 ounce would, like depth-wise, you know? Yep. And I can skip the hell out of it, dude. Like, a 3/8 in that Mini, like, it's a bullet, dude. You put like a little I put a little Komodo on it, or a little gambler, like easy swimmer. I can put that joker in the back of a dock, dude. Easy, way, way back. And it's got a little different vibration because it's got that smaller blade.
Yeah, I rigged one up thinking in that cold water was gonna be the deal. We never really got shallow enough for that.
Right.
Yeah, I rigged up a 3/8 mini max with this little 3.5 inch tactical minnow, and it was there will be a time where it's going to be spicy in there.
And I think the smallmouth, like, you want to talk about a smallmouth chatterbait? Yeah. That's it, dude.
Yeah. And it doesn't thump. It vibrates, nope. Right? Like, it's more like a lip. It feels like a quarter ounce trap.
Yeah. Cause I was fishing it in hell, dude. It must've been 55 degrees, which I guess for you guys, by you guys is a little bit warmer, but for us, that's still like trap winter pre-spawn, you know, kind of fishing, dude. So it's subtle fishing, and they were chomping it, dude.
Yeah, absolutely. Money Bass with the $2 donation. Thank you. That's awesome. Much appreciated. He wants to know when you're coming back to Lanier, or maybe you were just there.
As soon as possible.
As soon as possible.
I might try to get, I'm sure he knows Tim at Hammond's Fishing over there. I actually just got off the phone with him this afternoon, and I'm hoping I'll get over there in a month or so. I really love fishing over there, but it is like about a 4-hour drive, so I got to kind of play my schedule to get over there.
And Chris Blank with the super sticker. Thank you, Chris. That's awesome. If you guys
I get like 50% of this deal or something, or how does this work, dude?
For sure. Mojo, you get a custom visor at the end of the night.
I get a custom visor. Very nice.
For the people that are on YouTube, they can see the little like video game Nintendo controller jumping and the super sticker. That's the one drawback of StreamYard, that doesn't pull over some of the cool stuff. And there was a what are some of your favorite chatterbait trailers?
So he kind of wrote them all down. So Easy Swimmer, either Easy Swimmer is a little paddle tail swim bait.
Yep.
So either that as it is, or actually, I think Tactical Bassin did it. And actually, I didn't even see them do it, but my buddy Jacob Wall showed me. But I think he might have saw it on Tactical Bassin, whatever. You cut the paddle off and just make it like a fin. The Komodo is great. That Spunk Shad is naughty too. Like, they all kind of have their place. I'm originally a big fluke guy, and every once in a while, I'll go back to that. The only problem with that fluke is since it doesn't have a fully plastic body, or like, you know, a contiguous body, it does slip down that hook a bit. So it doesn't stay on there as well as you'd like. But if somebody made like a full body fluke with that nice little fork tail, that would be on my list, because that's one of my favorites. It really makes that chatterbait hunt really well. Where's some other ones? I'll put like gambler stuff would be the burner craw, or like a rage tail lobster. Yeah. You know, I'll put those on if there's a lot of brim around and I'm trying to keep the bait high and maybe fish it a little bit slower. But I'm not gonna lie, especially living in Alabama, where really these fish are focused for the most part on shad, those more straight, streamlined type baits seem to fish the bait a little faster. There's a little less drag, and they really provide that hunting motion that's more like those darting shad. So I've really kind of leaned more into that, or into those, I guess you'd say.
The other place I like a a cross style rigged horizontally is around wood, right? So it'll
deflect
and keep your chatterbait from rolling and hooking the wood. So it's really, you know, day in and day out, it's a really thin, straight minnow like this is my go-to. And there are times that I will put a paddle tail or I'll put a you know, flapping craw or something, but it's because I'm trying to get it to do something differently, you know, like ride up or deflect. Or,
that's the whole trick.
You know, maybe sometimes I want a trailer with action because it'll actually kill the chatterbait action and tone it down in cold water or things like that. Right? So
I think that's something that, a lot of people, because a lot of people are thinking more of like what trailer, I don't know how to frame it, but maybe they think more about like what trailer do I want to complement the chatterbait, but it's more of a question, at least the way I look at it is, do I want to take away from the action of the chatterbait or do I want to add to the action of the chatterbait? Because I think that's really what the trailers do. Like it adds some bulk and some weight, but really they affect how the chatterbait behaves. Whether you get that hunting or darting, whether you get it to ride pretty even and low in the water column versus riding up. And I think those are really the ways you need to look at
a chatterbait trailer. Do you want it faster? Do you want it slower?
Exactly. Right? Do you want more drag on it? You know, like those are kind of the things that I think.
Do you want it to hover when it hits the water or get down and start?
Yeah, I mean, exactly, dude.
Yeah, I the Flush looks like it would be a good chatterbait trailer. I bought a pack. I haven't fished a lot, but that's their Sixth Sense fluke style bait, and it looks pretty like it would make a good one.
You can't go wrong with a fluke. I'll be totally honest with you, dude. Like, if I had to pick one chatterbait trailer, that's probably what it would be, because you can do a green one, you can do a white one, and it makes that chatterbait dance, dude. It really does. It'll be running straight for like 3 feet, and then all of a sudden it'll be like, right turn, and then it'll come back. You know, it's very hunty. It's very erratic.
AJ, you're going to get banned if you're talking bad about the Menace. Don't do it.
Ban him! Ban him! I like when it gets a little violent. Yeah. This is good stuff.
How about Mikey's recommendation on jerkbait or hydrilla on the Harris chain? Would like something floating like a bomber that gets to 3 feet.
I mean, your best bet is probably like a bomber. I like... I ran that Nishine when I fished Toho this past December. Hydrilla was a little bit deeper, approximately 4 feet or so. Maybe a hair more in places, but I liked it because it would tick. It was a bigger profile, easier to cast, and I could get it into that hydrilla and actually rip it out. But the bomber is kind of your only option for floating when it comes down to it. I played around with it. What's his name? Who makes the 110 Megabass? Yeah. Megabass makes a giant floating, it's like a 6.5-7 inch floating jerkbait. Looks exactly like a wild shiner, dude. I have tried to catch a bass on that thing many a time, and it would be perfect in that situation. I have not gotten a bite on it. So if you can use that and catch one on it, please let me know, because I think it would be perfect. But it's just one of those things where the stars align, but it doesn't get bit for me at least.
Yeah. Otherwise, doesn't Smithwick make a – they used to make a floating Rogue.
Aren't those all the same? Aren't Smithwick and Bomber owned by the same people or no? I don't know.
Or you could throw in an original Rapala, right? Like that would be a
– them jokers aren't possible to cast though, dude. Like they are just – like because that's part of the problem in Florida. You need to make that long cast and keep that bait up. That's why you almost got to run that floating deal, you know. Like a wake bait might be something to look at too. Like you can get a wake bait that'll run like 6 inches below, and you can kind of maybe duck your rod tip down and tick the tips of that hydrilla or something like that. Might be something like the other one is that what the hell's that thing called? Lucky Craft BDS. I think it's the two. That'll tick too. It's like a little fat wobbler. It runs like a foot and a half or so on like 15-pound, 17-pound fluorocarbon.
Yeah,
Yuzuri jerkbaits are bad.
I've heard good things about Yuzuri from a lot of people. I haven't thrown them, but it's on my list of things to try.
Dude, they fall right into your category because they're price point sensitive. They're really reasonable. It's a really well made jerkbait. They come with some thicker hooks on them, you know, instead of those little mega bass dinks. And they get bit. You know how it is with some jerkbaits. Some like just don't get bit. At least in my experience, like the Joker gets bit, dude. There's some good color finishes on it too.
Critical Graves says, what's your progression for fishing? Moon, weather, temp, water color? Like what are you, like when you first get somewhere, like what's your process for breaking things down?
So I'll be totally honest with you. My progression is can I get all my work done and go fishing? And then I kind of address those things. So it's more of a, do I have the opportunity to fish? If so, like, is it halfway, like, not going to thunderstorm and destroy me out there? But other than that, though, so I'm in Alabama. I fish a lot of the TVA or impoundments. So mm-hmm. one of the first things that I'll refer to is water levels as well as current flow. Those are big factors that played into today. Actually, we had falling water and then we had a cold front. So we had falling water, less current, and a cold front go through. All these great factors that actually all three of those you do not want. So I probably shouldn't have gone today, but I'll analyze those things. The one thing that I've found, though, is I use those as ways to attribute maybe issues that I'm running into on the water. Why I'm maybe not getting bite doing a certain thing. Maybe I'm fishing too fast, but I try to keep those out of my mind as things that are saying, hey, you can't catch fish today, because yeah. then it'll just piss you off and it just puts you on the, you know, on the ground. Moon wise though, I hate fishing after a full moon unless there's brim spawning or maybe a shad spawn, or if the fish are spawning like the bass are. But at the same time, usually after full moon, they'll bite in the morning and they'll bite at 1 p.m. So like there's little things like that you can think of. But I try to take those things into factors, you know, cloudy days, fish might be up in the water, calm, maybe I have to fish brighter colors. But at the same time, the fish aren't that smart. So like I'll do what I know how to do, what I like to do, and look at more maybe of a seasonal kind of aspect. Where should they be? And then try to run a variation on that using those more like weather factors, maybe little tweaks that I can make to presentations or to where I'm at.
Nice.
Not that any of that's right, by the way. but
every now and then you catch one doing it. So
yeah, you kind of have your process and you go through it.
There's been a few people wondering where Bog is tonight.
But. Oh, dude, he's in detention. He's out hanging out with the girl and Rob. Yeah, I can go get him if you guys want to see him.
I'm sure we'll have to make an appearance at some point. But.
Hold on. Let me holler real quick. Come on. Come on. George Ball. Come on, George Ball.
He's not interested.
No, he's coming. He likes Rob, dude. He's big into Asian camera guys.
Oh. Everybody likes Rob, I think.
Come on, you big lazy galoot. They want to see you on the live stream, dude. Come on. He was Rich. Fishing today, so he's real tired, guys.
It's hard. Life is hard.
He sleeps on this thing that I built. Come here. Say hello, everybody. Come on.
He's like, nah.
You're so lazy, dude. Come here. He sleeps on this big old bed thing that I made him. I take him friggin' fishing with me. He sleeps in the truck. I feed him every day. But he's so distraught, you know, living this hard lifestyle and all that.
Fresh air. Where's the dog out? I mean, you know.
Oh, dude. He's discriminated against because of his breed. I mean, it's a tough life, dude. Super tough life. But he had fun today. He loses his deal, dude, with smallmouth. Smallmouth and grass fish. Like he almost put holes in my seat today. He was standing. My buddy caught like a 2.5 pound freaking smallmouth, and he boat flips it, and he grabs it. The dog's on top of my seats, standing up, trying to bite the tail of the smallmouth. And I'm like, you never get this excited when I catch like a 4 pound largemouth, you know, just off a dock. Like I don't know. So he's a weird joker.
Yeah. Rich, the co-angler. I mean, I think. 5, 6, 7 rods is a pretty good range for co-anglers. I mean, you should be able to kind of pack things up and have a few versatile rods to ride in anybody's boat and catch some fish with, you know, 5, 6, 7 rods.
You should bring more than just to piss off your boater.
It kind of depends. Is this like a stranger thing where you're drawing a random guy in a tournament, or are you going with your buddy? Because like if it's your buddy, you know,
bring whatever you want.
Bring 13.
Or you can use his stuff too. I always
tell people, just leave him laying around the deck just to see how mad he'll get and make a big mess. And
I had a guy. Hopefully he's not watching this. So I fished in BFL like in what like 2012 on Okeechobee, and I had my Tracker 175, dude. And I never fished as a co-angler because I didn't want to deal with a boater. Like, I just wanted to – it's like, dude, if I'm going to pay $200, I'm going to either win my $200 or I'm going to lose it. I'm not letting somebody else decide that for me. So the dude shows up, and he sets, like, a tackle box next to my boat. I'm like, hey, what's up? What's going on? He sets some rods down. He's like, oh, I'm whatever. Forget his name. He's like, I'll be right back. So he goes back, dude, and I'm just sitting there. But Junger comes back with freaking two more. Remember them old plastic tackle boxes that were like that high with the plastic drawers?
Like the black, yeah.
Dude, he brought two more of them, and he had like freaking, I don't know, this is before they put limits on the rods, like 12 rods, dude. We're in a Tracker 175, like 17 and a half foot boat, a BFL. And he's loading all this stuff in, and I'm like, dude, I don't even have box space for my own stuff, much less yours. You're going to put that at your feet, dude. Needless to say, I don't think he's very happy. Me, I wasn't happy with him either. So, is what it is.
Yeah. You know much about the Dominguez rig? I've never fished it.
I love the Dominguez rig. Right. You're going to see a lot more of that with active target and forward facing sonar. That's a pick 'em off rig, dude. Yeah, I've actually fished that quite a bit around here on Normandy and on Smith, like a quarter to a 3/8 ounce, either running what the hell is that elastic stuff? Like the striking little fluky dookie deals.
Z2 or.
Yeah, that little short ones. Or a gambler, shaky shad. Just like little streamlined straight tail stuff that you can kind of like pendle them down. Like you kind of like pitch it out to them, pendle them it through. Almost like you do with a Kitech, like straight lining it or tight lining it. Or I'm vertical on. And I like it because you can see the bait. It shows up and gets a profile on your active target, your forward facing. And you can really put it on them, dude. It's kind of, and you can do a lot with it. Like I said, you can pitch to them and like pendle them, or you can vertical them. It's fun.
Do you? Is there a certain style of fishery or a forage base, or what do you think makes a good Dominguez fishery?
I mean, usually I would say 10 foot or deeper, but it's more if I can see them on the active target, I can catch them on that. Like if it's a little bit deeper, you need to have a little bit of a buffer, you know, depth wise between you and the fish. But I think that's something I talked about this on another podcast I was on. You're going to see like this whole range of baits in the next like 2 to 3 years that develop or sort of evolve based upon forward facing sonar. And there's going to be like, you know, you got your swim bait arsenal, you got your flipping arsenal, you're going to have your forward facing sonar arsenal, like baits that'll show up on that graph, on that transducer, things that you can use in like very as a tool, I guess, hand in hand with that forward facing sonar that allow you to present baits very specifically and like targeted. That's going to be like a thing that you're going to see from some of these bait manufacturers. Forty rods, I like it. That's my kind of guy. You got to start some stuff when you get on a boat with somebody, right? Like, that's actually a really good question. Do you have forward facing sonar?
My new boat will be wired for it, but I don't have like it will be on there before the end of the year. I've been in a couple boats that have had it, but
okay. Because this is something I actually learned about when I got it last year. And it's actually kind of an offshoot. You've had structure scan, like side scan and all that jazz. Do you crank your down scan up so your contrast is pretty high?
Depends. Most of my graphs are just there to throw people off so that when I'm dock fishing, they think I fish offshore. But
dude, that is awesome. That is the best answer, dude. Please.
I don't even turn them on. They're just decoy units.
That's a good idea. So I, you know what, I should do that. Like, I run the camera in the back of my boat. I should actually drop like a waypoint on a lake that I'm not on. And you know how it does like the numbers for where you're at. Sure. I should do that and get it.
Just put it in as a little B-roll. Like,
yeah, dude, put it. Yeah, exactly. Like, people be sitting on a like block of land freaking in the middle of it. In any case, one thing I learned, you know, Ryan Salzman, the guy on Gunnersville.
Yeah, I mean, I know of him. Yeah, I mean,
so Ryan's a big electronics guy, yep. And he kind of taught me a lot about that stuff. And I kind of came with some knowledge, but he helped me really tweak it. And one thing that he does is he cranks up his contrast on his downscan. And the reason being, he's like, dude, if you see something on there, it's a fish. Might not be the fish that you're trying to catch, but it'll give you better bottom separation, because if it's a dot above the bottom or near the bottom, it's something. And I'm like, yeah, that's reasonable. So I sort of took that same approach with the active target, because really with forward facing sonar, it's still very interpretive. You see things move and that indicates right. That they're alive usually,
right.
But cranking up the contrast on that thing is excellent because it's not like you're trying to see like the face of the fish and how many like stripes it has across its lateral line. You're trying to see a dot that moves back and forth. So the greater contrast, the greater brightness and standoutness it has without getting a bunch of interference is important. And then the other thing I found with mine, I don't know what Garmin's LiveScope offers palette was, but right. There's a red yellowish palette on my active target. And it really provides a lot of contrast. It also picks up a lot. So you get a little bit more chattery sort of interference that shows up because of the color palette, but it also shows everything in a very like brusque way. It stands out. So my recommendation is crank your contrast to a point where you can, like, it doesn't wash off the screen, but you get real hard lines on objects. And then you can always bring it back down from there. But it's a great starting point to really see everything and kind of figure out what's moving and what's not.
Yeah, that was we had John Sukup on a month ago or so. And he's big on, like, I just want the information. I could care less about how clean it looks or how crystal and how crisp it is. He's like, just I like to crank things up.
Yeah,
I want to get all that information on the screen and I'll try to figure it out later. But he's not concerned about how pretty it looks. He just wants to get as much information as possible.
Because it's not like 2D sonar. You're not trying to get like a color line so you get your arcs and you can figure out how big the fish are and all that jazz. Like it's literally, it's one color or the other, you know, and it's a hard object. So you want it to contrast a bunch against that background so you can pick it up, dude.
Absolutely. Everett wants to know if you're coming to Texas.
So Rob, who's in the other room, he called me this afternoon. He's like, hey, Mikey, you want to go to Texas? I'm like, yes, Rob, I do want to go to Texas. He's like tomorrow? And I'm like, Rob, in a perfect world, I would literally get in a truck and go to Texas with you tomorrow. But I got work to do, and I literally just got home from Florida, dude. So no, I cannot go to Texas. But he's like, dude, they're on beds. I'm like, dude, you're killing me. I can't go. I want to go. I'm going to try to go next year. I got a buddy down there, Texas. Big Bass Tours, I think is his guide service. Super cool dude. His name's Brian Parker. He does a lot of guide trips down there, super down to earth. And I'm sure he could help to get me started down there. But there's some bigs, no doubt, getting caught in Texas. Texas is the new Florida, in all frankness, right now. And it ain't going to last. So you better get on it while you can, you know.
Christopher just says he's been watching you religiously. And he's definitely upped his game. So that's awesome.
Dude, I'm glad to hear it. I'm glad the videos have helped. I love making them. So somebody watching them and enjoying them really means a lot, dude.
Yeah, that's the, I don't know. Like, I always like to say that, like, the whole, my thesis for the channel is to help you catch, help you catch more big bass and suck less.
Yeah, dude. It's that simple. Like, it really is, dude. It is fun making the videos too, dude. Yeah, like I can't lie. Like there's nothing like going back. Like today, so we caught like 2 4-pound smallmouth. Like not megas, not small ones, but it is fun going and just watching and being like, oh, shaking my rod tip like 4 times and then she bit. Or it was just right after the cat. Like it's fun to watch and like capture that, dude. And it's, there's so much information, even on a personal level, like beyond you sharing it and all that, that you can kind of take away and learn from, dude.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a little slower. We had Gary Dobbins on last week, and it was a little crazy.
The chat. That must have been kind of interesting.
Yeah, it was. There was a lot of people getting their rod questions, and Gary's he's a good storyteller. He's got like every time somebody's got a rod question, he's got like, well, you know, we designed this rod for Carolina rigging on Diamond Valley Lake, you know, and like there's a really good story for it, so it's cool.
That's really cool.
What are your main rods and reels, I guess?
So I got a bunch of Halo rods. I'm buddies with a guy that runs Halo. He's actually a stick on Garnersville, dude. Sure. Bald. But I got those. I got speaking of Dobbins, I have a Dobbins Fury 795. It's kind of like my swim bait rod, my all-around, all-purpose. I think I got a Daiwa, what the hell is it called? Tatula on there. Yep. And then beyond that, I have a mix mostly of Shimano's. Excuse me. Mix of mostly Shimano's. I think I might have a Luz in there, a Speed Spool. And then I got some Daiwa spinning reels. Dude, so all right, I will never buy myself something crazy expensive, but my buddy gave me a present, and he really should not have because it's ungodly price. He gave me a Blue Arcea Xenon. Do you know those?
I know of them. I haven't
held
them.
$500 spinning reel, dude. Like, it's a stupid expense. It's their response to a freaking Stratic. Dude, that thing, it's the craziest deal. It feels like a total piece of garbage because it weighs nothing. So, like, right. It feels very nothing.
It kind of feels cheap because it doesn't feel like there's anything
exactly.
There.
It's all like carbon fiber or something. But, dude, it weighs nothing. So, it's like sitting there shaking it with a Ned. Like, it doesn't – it's freaking easy. But the drag on it is stupid. And it's – I can't thank him enough for giving that to me because he really should
know. I may or may not be having a rod video coming out, a very irresponsible acquisition.
Oh, really? Rod. I like that. An irresponsible. You should actually title it that. I made an irresponsible.
That's the thing. Is like I got to figure. Like that's probably why I haven't done it yet. Because I haven't figured out the right title for it yet.
What the hell was that show with Jason Bateman? Like, I think you've made a huge mistake, or I think I've made a huge mistake, kind of deal, or something like that.
Nice.
But yeah, that's what I got. It's Shimano stuff mainly, and then a bunch of Halo rods. I love, dude. It's funny with the reels. I ain't hating on anybody. Because there's a lot of reels that are decent out there, but I swear to you, I'll fish my Shimano stuff. I got a bunch of the old 200Es, and I'll try some other brand. We'll leave it at that. And like, it's decent, it's nice, and then something will happen to it, or I'll just be like, you know, I kind of, yeah, that's the golden rule right there. But I just keep coming back to the Shimano stuff, and I'll be the first to admit the price point, usually the old Kronark. Very nice, which is the 200E, but just in a white shell. Very nice, dude. But like, freaking, you know, they're not the most price point great, but they just last. The new ones aren't as great as the old ones, but they're still pretty freaking bulletproof, dude.
Yeah, it's out in the garage, but I also got a Kronark D, which whenever I show that, people get excited about the old Kronark D, the Pearl. Yeah. I sold a couple of those and regret those. Like, they're not light, but God, they're amazing reels. They're just,
well, you know, and what's funny about that is with all like the millennial kind of Gen Y, what do you call it? Like the sentimentalism, like for the 80s and the 90s, you'd think those jokers would do like a legacy release or something of like the old 200. They'd make a killing. But at the same time, I know like the manufacturing cost is their margins are going to be a lot less because it would probably cost like $300 now, dude. But
sure.
I bet you they would sell a ton of those jokers to guys like thinking about the old times when they used to get them, plus new anglers experiencing like that level of quality and that like solid of a build, dude. But that was,
I was joking that when Steve Kennedy was leading the classic on Texas Lake, whichever one, the one that was in Texas 2 years ago that Cherry won, right? But he was leading, and I was like, man, when Kennedy wins this is going to be the time to sell my old green Corrados, and they're going to be a killing on eBay because everybody's going to want one.
Dude, right now they kill on eBay.
I know, but I'm saying if you would have won the classic on the old Bantam,
yeah,
right? Like true. The green Bantam would have been like, all right, this is the time to cash in.
Yeah. They're worth gold, dude.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, you want me to show you something else worth gold?
Come on. Yeah, I always like to see cool things.
He hasn't seen one of these, right?
The skirt expander?
Yeah. Do you know how much they cost online now?
Oh, they don't make them anymore? Or?
They don't make them anymore.
They're have one in a bag somewhere over here in a box that I never opened.
Find it and sell it. They're like $300 on eBay, and you got to buy them out of country. Yeah. No, it's stupid. I went to order one like about a year and a half
ago. I can make half a boat payment if I'm willing to sell my skirt.
Exactly. I went to order one like a year and a half ago, dude, and they weren't on top of the warehouse. And I started trolling around looking for them, and dude, you can't find them. And my buddy in Florida is like, bro, I got two. I'll hook you up. I'm like, no, dude. Like, that thing, you sell that thing. He's like, bro, I'm not going to use it. And like, you'll actually use it. I'm like, I will use it. But he sent it to me, and I don't deserve it at all. But that thing is
for $300, I can send a lot of jigs to Super K and have them hand tie them for that.
Yeah. Little barter and swap deal, right?
Yeah, I think a lot of us have regrets about some of the reels that we let go.
Yeah.
There was a time where, like, I had, you know, like, more of these and these. And I was like, oh, I'm going to get the Credo D and the Credo I. And
which were garbage, dude.
I mean, they're decent, but they're not what these were.
They're not. Like, right.
It's, Were they lighter? Sure, but they weren't. Yeah.
Well, I know I bought. So I was a poor joker for a long time, and now I'm a less poor joker. And when I really started buying like my arsenal of reels, it was when they were discontinuing the 200Es and the 50Es or whatever. So Dick's had them for, I think, like $110 on clearance. I literally hopped Dick's Sporting Goods all throughout Fort Lauderdale, buying as many as I could. I think I had like 6 left or something like that. And yeah, I won't give, I've repaired them, had them fixed, because they break after a while, but they break after like 5 years of like flipping 65-pound braid, you know, like. But now it's starting to get where some of these people that fix my reels, like, they can't get parts for them. Mm-hmm. Like, they used to be able to take the 200E Corona parts and use them on the old Corrados, because it's the same reel pretty much. And they stopped making a lot of those parts. So it's getting a little tough to fix them, which sucks. But
so now you're going to have to start like, okay, I got to take this piece off this piece.
Yeah, right.
You're going to be like, 8 reels is going to turn into 6 reels from the parts of those. And like,
dude, well, I got one that's a 200E case in green halfway around. And then you get to the pull away plate, and it's the white freaking pull away plate from the Corona, dude. So it's like the zebra reels, white and green.
Nice.
At some point, I'll just have to get the new stuff. I've heard Rob was actually telling me, like, the new, what is it, the new Corrados, the upper end one, not the 179, but the one step up from there.
Oh, dude, like the MGLs.
Yeah, like they're freaking rock solid, dude. The Engage, the Instant Antiverse, they're super solid. I just don't like biting the bullet. I got what I like, and as long as it doesn't break, knock on wood, I'm gonna keep using it.
I haven't bought many of the newer, more expensive Shimano's, but I really like the Shimano SLXT for 129. Like,
oh, dude, that's like the deal. Yeah. And even I have a whole freaking hard drive server under my desk for all my video stuff, and I just kick the face off of it like a smart person. The SLX, even the $99.99 from Tackle Warehouse, dude, I've bought, especially being up in Alabama where I'm doing some braid applications for some flipping in that, but the majority of my applications take 12 to 20 pound fluorocarbon. Like, I don't need $300, $250 reel that's never going to break. Like, I need a utility reel that'll cast and wind, and the drag won't slip most of the time, you know? Like, that's a deal, dude.
Yeah.
The Tranx is nice. Jake Dad just talked about the Shimano Tranx. That's a nice reel. It's just not a nice price point.
I still have a Corrado 300E that I use for my swim baits.
That's what I wish I would have got. I got the little bigger Tatula. And it's pretty nice, but I'm not a huge fan of the bar that slides back and forth. I feel like it nicks the line from time to time.
Yeah, I think we just said it. The SLX XT.
Yeah.
I mean, and even the Tula, or yeah, the Daiwa Tatula CTs.
Yeah. Right?
Those are like 130. Those are rock solid too. Like,
yeah, for the price point that you can't beat them. You know, I used to really like the Luz. The speed spools, you know, $100, because they were one of the first that came out with like $100 price point. Mm-hmm. The only issue that I have like 3 or 4 of them. The only issue I ran into those is I got a lot of variability in the braking system. Like, I'd get one, it'd be awesome. I'd get another, and it would cast like 4,000 miles. And then I'd get another that wouldn't like cast as far. And like, even though I adjusted the braking system, there just seemed to be, I haven't bought one in like 4 years though, but there's just some variability. But they had a pretty solid product as well.
I don't know. I saw Sean like DM me, asked if you got put in timeout, and I don't think you're in timeout, Sean.
You're banning people, but
maybe one of my mods is getting out of hand here.
I was just gonna say Gene Parmesan, that's a great name. He just mentioned the BPS Pro Qualifier. You know, one thing that does make me sad is the Bass Pro reels used to be solid back in the day when I was a kid. Like, that's all we bought was the combos, you know, like the Extreme combo, the Pro Qualifier,
the Bionic Blade combo,
the Bionic Blade, yeah, the cranking stick, you know. But some of their reels kind of, I don't know, I used to flip with an Extreme, dude, and it would hold up, dude. And then they kind of, they just got, I guess all the reels got a little bit cheaper and the price points went up.
Can't have Sean in timeout. He's like a, he's an integral part of the family. South Jersey, what's your favorite swim do you use in tannic or tinted water?
Or maybe a couple. I mean, like in grass in Florida, we got the goat, super stout hook, but it's for like super thick grass. And that's really what I go for, is something with a really strong brush guard to go through that stuff, be able to fish pretty quick. The other one that I actually played with, and it's a swim jig for everything, is like I was telling you, I kind of have been on a micro sizing or a downsizing kick, and Cumberland Pro has this little sort of mini swim jig with these like wire. I don't know if you guys ever saw like those New Tech jigs back in the day, but they had like two wire bands. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like the fork. And especially when we get in fall, the fish get really weird, dude. They respond to really small baits, move really fast. And that thing is bad to the bone. It's a really small profile. I can actually put like a little 2-inch, like a 2.1 Kitek, or I'm sorry, yeah, a 2.8 Kitek. Or Gambler makes this little 2.5-inch, it almost looks like a crappie bait, you know, like a little minnow. I can put a super small bait on it and really burn it through the grass or around cover in that, and it works really well, even in that tannic water.
Interesting. Cool. What's up, Jig Squad? Yeah, I guess somebody else is saying that they were having trouble in a different stream tonight where they got put in timeout for no apparent reason, or like YouTube's just putting people in timeout, I guess. I don't know.
Nice. Well, freaking Elon Musk should buy YouTube now, too. I think we'd all get a lot more views, dude.
He did fish one time up by Detroit Lakes a long time ago, Minnesota. He was amazed at how big and dumb our fish were.
It was a beautiful place, though. That place was cool, dude.
So this question, do you still working outside of the YouTube game, or are you mostly?
Oh, hell yeah, dude. Yeah. I mean, come on. You can't make no money doing this shit. Like,
if your name's Matt Allen, maybe, but
yeah, but you know, even their views are getting, did you see how bad their views have been throttled, dude? Like, that hurts. Like, and I don't know why YouTube is doing it. It seems like they're doing it to a lot of like the older content creators, like the guys that have been like around for a while. They're really throttling views, dude.
Not that the people here probably care watching this, because they want to know like how to catch fish on fat aces and things like that. But I think it's just the audience is shifting, and I think you got to change to keep up with the audience.
I don't disagree with that, but there are changes like, in the algorithm with the way dissemination is going.
But I'm just saying, like, subscribers don't mean much, and you can't rest on your laurels and just do things.
That's very true.
You can't do the things you used to do and just think you're going to still get the same amount of views.
That is true, but there is a change in the way the algorithm has worked for dissemination, especially geared towards outdoor content, because you can even do like a cross-reference. You had the big hunting kill, you know, kickoff by YouTube where they knocked off a bunch of videos like that, and then downgrade's not the right word, but they reassessed, whatever, we don't want to get into it. But yeah, you definitely need to stay fresh and lively and change content, but it sure would be nice if YouTube treated people who shoot fishing videos like people who shoot makeup videos and all that other garbage, but they don't. No, what I do, so I don't do all YouTube. I'd like to do more of it. I have a lot of fun shooting videos of it, doing that, learning myself, as well as kind of sharing those experiences and traveling around. But I've always been when I started doing YouTube, I think that was 2010. It was literally at the dawn of YouTube. Like, some of my videos are the first fishing videos to ever exist on YouTube. Me, John B., there's some other crazy dude. I forget what his name is. Some dude from Ohio. Like, there's a few of us.
Tyler Bergen. Or right, Bass HQ.
He was on there ways back. Okay. All
right, no, not after OG. Yep, go ahead.
Yeah, but in any case, though, I was always concerned with it. Like, I never thought of it as a way to actually make money from a long term standpoint. So I always hedged. You know, I got into content production. I'm kind of a dork, dude. I do a lot of web oriented stuff, so web marketing, web administration stuff. I work off my computer. And work with a bunch of different contractors that I have, from the fishing industry to insurance companies to I worked with a lawyer once. Like, I do a lot of different contract work in the way of web marketing and web consulting stuff. And that's kind of my deal, basically.
So you're mostly in and around content for fishing, but it's not just for you.
That and even outside, so like social
even
media
outside of fishing, just yeah, general content,
because the money's outside of the fishing industry, too.
That's true.
ain't no money in fishing, bro. A lot of fun to be had, but ain't no money. So, but I try to keep it diverse. That way, if I get canned doing one thing, like I can kind of keep on going. That's always been my approach, you know. Like screw me, screw you. I'll go find something else to do, you know. But I can last long enough to keep on going.
Yeah, absolutely. You ever play with a hybrid hunter in the hydrilla?
Yeah, that's the one with the shaky bill, right?
No, that's the Jabberjaw. The hybrid hunter is this guy.
No. Okay. So full disclosure.
Which is the old, like, what it's the strike. What is it? Because Strike King makes it now, but with Strike Pro, it was like the Strike Pro Bubba, and then Todd Castlebank got Strike King to make or licensed it to remake it.
I didn't know that. Huh.
I think you'd like this. This is supposed to be like a, it's supposed to be like a four-wheel drive. Like it's supposed to be very horizontal in the water. Like it doesn't dive. It like, sorry, wrong direction. It doesn't, it like gets down and then just goes like this. And it's got like super loud and it like wide. It's supposed to like just go through like it's supposed to be really good in hydrilla.
So full disclosure, I think that's one of the stupidest looking baits I've ever seen.
Oh, it is. It looks dumb.
But I mean, 100%. that's where I'm an idiot because I let my bias like overrun. I've had in the past 2 months, 5 people that I trust very much tell me, hey, dude, you need to get this bait and throw it because not only will you catch fish on it, but you'll love it. And I'm like, it looks so stupid. But I think this is the final straw. Like I've been told many a time, dude, it catches them. And that's one of the problems with fishing baits is we freaking look at them and we're like, yeah, I love it. And they never catch anything off of it, you know, and freaking it's all what do you sell to the fishing eye or fish for the fishermen or something. What's that phrase? Trying to catch the fishermen or something, not the fish.
Yeah. I made Sean a moderator, which apparently got him back. So there you go.
He's not in jail anymore.
Mm-hmm. I made him a mod so that, Strike Pro Bubba.
I remember seeing that maybe that's why. Because Strike Pro, and like plastics and stuff too.
Yeah, they made some like swim baits and some weird, like.
And then they took a dump and disappeared, right?
I think they're like, I want to say they're like a European company or something, or like they're not a U.S. company. So I still think they make a lot of baits overseas, but they don't make them.
Right.
They don't really distribute them in the U.S. And the other thing is their paint jobs are
awesome. Or something European domestic product or something or manufacturer versus.
They had really ugly looking paint jobs. So on top of their ridiculous shaped crankbait that looked really dumb, then the paint jobs were bad. But now Strike King, they look. I've been Bass & Fanatics says you fish Wheeler.
Very rarely, and I need to fish it more. I've heard it's pretty good. I know there's some giant smallmouth in there, and it's actually probably one of the closest lakes to where I live in Huntsville.
And so, I heard it's kind of on an upswing, right? Like
It is on an upswing, but it's also on a knock your lower unit off swing. There's some flats out there that scare me very much, and they're not. I wouldn't say they're not mapped very well, but like when they draw the water down and I drive over the bridge to go to Decatur, I can see all the stumps that are sticking up 2 foot off the bottom in these flats that I'd be running around. And then the water comes up like 2.5 feet and I'm contemplating in my mind, I'm like, is this enough water over these stumps for me to run on pad across this flat? So I don't feel very good about it.
Does the Nitro have a hydraulic jack plate?
It does. But I'd like to keep that on there, you know, like.
That's the problem, is if you break a prop or a jack plate or a lower unit, it's hard to find it. It's not the cost. It's like getting the part.
That's what I'm also – because, dude, without a boat, like the videos will suffer, but I can shoot some tip videos and stuff like that. But my mental state will go to hell. I will lose my freaking mind. Like I'm not going to lie. I work a lot with the stuff that I do. And I will be working till 10, 11 at night. And my only reprieve for that is I will work 10, 12 hours for the next 3-4 days. But then I get to go fish for 10 or 12 hours. Like that's what I get. That's my reward. And if I don't get that,
then all the other stuff weighs 70 times more than what it would if I can't, like, if I can go fishing. So
you get no sympathy from me. I didn't catch a bass from mid-November till last weekend.
Yeah, that's on you, bro.
Move that's south. A lot of tip videos,
bro. Move south, bro. That's on you. That's
no need to do that, Sean, but thanks for the donation. Awesome. Appreciate it. Dustin's off work. He's out of the jail. Literally and figuratively.
Nice.
The new Bantam. I feel like the new Bantams are not inexpensive, if I remember right.
No, they are pricey. All of them are pricey, dude, except for the SLX.
Do you fish tourneys anymore, or are you kind of off the tourneys?
I haven't fished a Durham in years, dude. I'm not a huge... I should fish one here and there because it'd be really cool video content. It also pushes you in a way that I think just going out for a day on the water doesn't. Even if you're the most motivated individual, you know, putting yourself on a time schedule, I do feel like I learned things tournament fishing just because I was pulling the trigger, forcing to make decisions. But I do have some ethical issues, I guess you'd say, with not even so much tournaments, but with the way guys operate in tournaments sometimes, just the treatment of fish. There's more fishing pressure than there's ever been, which I think translates to mean we should be, I don't like the word conservationist or environmentalist because I think that's yuppie bleep, you know, but like we got to take care of the fish more because they're getting beat up more, which is fine. It's a sport. It's fun. Like everybody does it, but in order for everybody to do it, we got to be more diligent about the way we take care of stuff. And I've seen stuff in tournaments, especially down in Florida on some of the deep lakes that I fish. Like, dude, they'll run a tournament on these lakes that have 7-8 pounders. You catch 30-pound bags offshore, and they'll have like 4 dead 7-pounders in a 30-40 boat tournament, and they'll just be sitting below the thing, dude. And it's like, what do you think is going to happen when you run a tournament in July and the water's freaking 94 degrees and you catch a fish in 25 feet? Like, are you stupid? Like, you must be, because that's what happens. So that kind of stuff frustrates me from guys who should know better. And it just treatment overall. I love catching fish. And one thing that stops me from catching fish is me sucking. That's something I can correct and do more about. And the other thing is people killing fish and not treating fish or being diligent about catch and release and stuff like that. That's something I can't do anything about, but I can piss and moan about it.
Sure. Yeah, that's one thing we don't – up here, our climates are pretty mild, and so, like, our water's pretty cool. But, yeah, I mean, there's definitely something to be said. There's also times, like, in the wintertime, right, where the fish – like, I know my dad would always – he wouldn't – he's kind of done with tournaments now, but he wouldn't fish any of the tournaments on Amistad or Falcon when he was down there when they would be in the winter when the fish were in 40 feet of water because he's like, they all die. Like, yeah. He's like, I just don't want to be a part of it, right? Like, it's one thing
if you're out there – these guys don't know, too, like – you can it because it's all about your process too. So like you can catch those fish, but like, dude, you need to catch them, get them up and get them back down. So those jokers are strong enough to get back down and get done. Like unless they're, I'd say 50, 60, 80, that's when those air bladders start to explode and you start killing fish. But like down to like 40, 50 ish, like you can still get them up. You just got to make sure they like, picture done or like live well for 2 seconds and done. And I think that's what they don't understand. Like you can't be fumbling around with the fish. I saw a video like a year or two ago and the dude caught like a 12 pounder in Florida. It was awesome. You know, his PB and all that, but he's also holding the fish. Like they catch the fish, it's pinned in some grass. They hold the fish out of the water for dude, a strong 5 minutes. Mm. Like this fish was probably on a bed, probably shallow doing its thing. It's already stressed out. And then you literally suffocate it for 5 minutes. I don't want to get too nitty with it, but you know what I mean? Like just simple stuff. Like I want to go back and catch that fish. I want that guy to catch that fish again. And like literally it's going to die when you do that, dude. Like at least be smart enough where it's like you caught your PB, throw it in the well, dude. Let it revive for like a minute and a half, 2 minutes. Get your camera set. Like I do this every time. Like I'll catch an 8-pounder and it's like, dude, first thing I'm going to do, I landed this fish. It's going in the well because I'm not going to sit there and dangle dick the fish on turning on a camera, getting set up for the release and that. Like you got a live well, use it. You know, just like little things like that can go a long way in taking care of especially bigger fish, dude.
Yeah, I guess this is a good point. I guess, yeah, it's the I don't get what your take is, but like, so in the summer months, a lot of those deeper fish are down there in what is cooler water, right? Mm-hmm. And you bring them to the top and you're having them out. So they're typically, I don't know, there's something about fish. They're less hardy in warm water. So whether it's walleye, whether it's bass, whether anything, if you catch them out of like 40, 50, 60 degree weather, they're tougher. I don't know. Yeah. They hold up. But in the warm, there's something about them where they're more fragile in warm water. And especially carrying them around in live wells in that warmer water.
That's what
is and like our water, like even when you put them in live well, like 80 degree water doesn't hold as much oxygen as 60 degree water.
Yep. That's a big player, dude. And their metabolism is higher. They're more initially exerted in that warm water. They come out more beat up already than they would if the water were cooler, you know? So they're already kind of stressed out. They're already like burning a lot of energy because it's warmer. Their bodies are working faster, you know? And like, there's a fine line between being like, not an environmentalist, but being like activist about this and just trying to be like, hey man, use some common sense, you know? And that's kind of like the fine line I try to walk, because I don't want to be somebody tapping on somebody's shoulders or being that Karen, or what do they call dudes like that now? Are they Kyles or Kyles something? Kyles
or Kens or Kents.
Yeah. I don't want to be that dude. I'm not here to navigate and manage, you know, things that you're doing. That's not my business. But at the same time, like, I think we all could, I don't know, just be a little bit better, because in the end we're paying it forward. Like, I want to catch that 7-pounder that you caught. You want to catch that, you know, I'm going to give myself credit, that 8-pounder that I caught, you know, like stuff like that, dude. And if you think about it in that context, or like, I want to catch it for that next derby, I think you just take that extra step to be a little more diligent about fish care. Cause I think that's all you need. Like the fish can handle the tournaments. The other thing is the MLF format. I know, dude, there's nothing that blows your load more than like hanging up like a 20-pound sack, dude, at the end of a day, putting it on scale and being like, I did this. But at the same time, though, that MLF format, it does the process and suits the process, but you don't get that big glory moment, you know? And that is kind of – it's annoying, but at the same time, it still gets the job done, you know? And I'd like to see more of that. Because I'd fish some stuff like that. But it's hard, too, because fishermen are a bunch of liars, dude. So, like, that kind of creates a little issue.
That's the thing is, like, I think in draw tournaments it can work, but in team tournaments, I don't know. You seem like a good dude, Mikey, but I wouldn't when 10 grand's on the line, or even, you know what I mean? It's like,
I don't want the money.
Really any of those guys, right?
Like, yeah. No, I agree with you there, dude. And maybe that's the gap we're in right now. You know, I know Tim from Hammonds does a real cool derby where it's a catch video release. So you catch fish, you have to actually video the release. So you see the fish going back underwater. Obviously, that doesn't solve the, hey, let's go put some fish in a cage or something like that. But that happens in regular tournaments, too. But at least in that case, you're not able to reuse the same fish over and over again because you see them letting go of it. There's little things that will gradually evolve to sort of address that, I think. But I'd like to see more of that. Yeah. Even though I know the logistics.
A hybrid thing where you bring in, you know, one fish, or, you know, maybe you bring in some of your fish, but some of you don't. Or maybe we weigh fish when it's, you know, water temps are in 75 and below. Yeah. But in the summer, we try to do more, you know, immediate release, you know, things like that.
Yeah. Just little things. Because, like, in the end, dude, 10 years from now, I want to be catching fish. I want to be catching big fish. And I want other people to be doing it and having that experience. Dude, that's why we shoot the videos. Like, your mission statement, learn, don't suck. You know, you need the fish to be around to do that, dude. And the more fish there are, granted, there's something to be said for management, getting some of the small ones out of there and stuff. But you need the fish to be there and to have that experience. And I want people to have that experience. I want to have that experience. So paying it forward, taking care of things a little bit more, being a little more common sense and diligent, not crazy, but a little more diligent and a little more careful with the fish, I think is an important step in getting to that point.
Yeah, great. That's a good transition here. So like, I have fished a little bit up there, but it's not much different than northern Minnesota. And I think, you know, the management of these fisheries up here has gone in the right direction. The water quality is getting better. People are being smarter about selective harvests. You know, people aren't eating as many 4-pound smallies as they used to. So, I mean, things like that are helping our fisheries up north for sure. Any plans to fish with Jacob anytime soon?
I'd like to. Jacob is off limits on Gunnersville because the
excuse me, the MLF is coming, or the
you can go to Wheeler.
Yeah, well, actually, you know, that's actually a good solution. But I'd like to get up. Me and Jacob, dude, we mesh. Like, he is such a cool, down-to-earth dude. And he has, you know, it's really cool. Like, in talking to you, so you're up north. I have some perspectives at having fish mm-hmm. in Wisconsin, but we have very different but complementing perspectives on fishing. Mm-hmm. Jacob is from freaking Oregon, or Oregon, as some people say. So, you know, I get out on the boat with – the story I always tell is me and Jacob were sight fishing on Gunnersville a couple of years back. We're out there, and, dude, there's, like, two-pound males there, and then we got, like, a three-pounder on a bed, and I'm working it, and he's like, hold my beer, watch this. I'm like, what, dude? So he goes in his box, and I think it was, like, a Roman made. He gets out this 8-inch freaking Roman made swim bait. I'm like, what in the hell are you going to do with that? He's like,
take you're like, spanging's not legal here. What are you doing?
So he freaking, dude, he slangs this thing out on this flat, and he's like, just watch. And I'm like, all right, you know, I'll try anything once, dude. And he's gliding this. I mean, dude, it looks like a fish I want to catch, you know, back.
Right.
Dude, this 4-pounder comes out. And there's little clumps of grass, but it's pretty open. Like, you can see 4-pounder comes out. 3-pounder comes out. These 2-pounders come out. I didn't even see them, dude. They flush out, and they're following this stupid freaking giant monstrous bait. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I had no idea there were this many fish on the flat. He's like, I'm not going to catch a single one of them, but it's something that you can do, especially when they're up doing that, you know, like that staging behavior, you know, when they're on the flats. It's something you can do to really get the feel of what's actually on a flat, especially if you can see, you know, visually, like, what's all here. And they'll come out, they'll get curious. They'll come out once or twice, and then they lose interest. But, dude, if you're pre-fishing for a tournament or something and you want to know what's coming, it's a great way to do it. I'm like, dude, that was – you didn't catch a fish, but that was one of the coolest things I've ever seen. So it's interesting because he has this totally different perspective, super chill, super open to sharing things. He actually makes his own baits. He carves freaking swim baits. But I really love the kid, dude. Very motivated. Just I wish I was as mature and cool and as chill as he is at his age when I was his age, because I was out of hand, dude. That's the way I roll. But he's a great dude to hang out with, and it's always a learning experience.
I definitely our next tournament is going to be on a place with some giants. I definitely plan to throw the glide bait and practice a little bit. So,
dude, it's stupid how it makes them show. Like, you're lucky if you catch one. You know, it's got to be kind of right and stuff. They will swat at it. But I was amazed how much it can tell you about an area that you're in without actually catching a fish. It's a crazy deal, dude. There are still on beds. Yes, there are still fish on beds on Gunnersville. There are fish on Gunnersville doing just about everything, which is crazy.
Nice. So it's like, tell me there's a bunch of giants here without actually catching a giant. Throw a glide bait. Yeah, that's a good point. Jacob does look like he's 14 somehow.
Yes, he does.
He's like Benjamin Button of bass fishing. Like,
he is a man child. But he's cool. Like that. He's giddy as hell. Dude, I act like a freaking 12-year-old when I catch fish. I don't know what happens, but and maybe that's why the dog acts like that, because the dog loses his freaking lunch. Like, he freaks out. But I think a lot of times dogs will like sort of have the same excitement as their owner or whoever they look up to, you know? And so I freak out when I catch a fish. The dog loses like his mind when I catch a fish. And so we're all a bunch of freaking crazy children anyways, addicts and crazy children.
Mike wants to know what you thought of the metallic red Sergeant Lipless.
I don't know. Go watch the video. Mikey knows what I think of that. Dude, that is a bad bait. That's a silent freaking trap, basically, the half ounce. And I smoked them on Gunnersville when nobody was catching fish around me multiple times, dude. And when I say smoked them, those jokers, I've never seen down in Florida, you catch a lot of trap fish, but it's like you catch them in like the traps on the side of their mouth because they swatted at it. I've never experienced until probably that with that Sergeant. I caught a few on red eye last year. What is it called, the two tap or the one tap, you know, where they like crossed it. Dude, these jokers on that silent, the water was kind of dingy, so I was a little skeptical about throwing it, but it was also really cold. They literally had it down their deal. I felt terrible because I'm all pissing and moaning about how people treat fish, and then I'm literally fishing a bait that like I had to dig out of some fish, dude. It was awesome. It, like, they smoked that thing. It was
fond of fish.
What's up, Gabe? Yeah, I threw it a little bit in practice, but it was just a little too cold yet. Like, they weren't on the lipless yet. I needed a few more degrees of temperature. But
you usually need like 50, maybe 49. I think I caught them 48 and a half and then all the way up to like 55 or whatever. Yeah. But 48 and a half. And, dude, when I was fishing in that 48, I'm talking like rod tips straight up in the air and just that. And then I'd hit a piece of grass and it wasn't like, it was just like, you know, I'd lift it over it, dude. And then just kind of keep it moving. It was a very slow retreat. And actually I did it on 12 pound test too. A lot of times I'll fish it on 15 around cover, but I was trying to get it into like 6 or 7 feet of water in a lot of places. So it was 12 pound fluorocarbon to get it down and keep it down. And then almost like slow rolling a spinner bait, dude, to the max.
Absolutely.
I actually wish they bit a trap more. I don't catch them as well in a trap later in the year, but I love fishing a trap, dude. I don't know about you, but like ripping it off the grass and stuff is one of the most fun reaction bites, dude.
I don't hate it.
You're hard to please, dude.
up here, we do a lot of flipping in the grass. Like that's kind of,
yeah,
but, but yeah, I could see where that sergeant with its unique, you know, the half ounces, the silent, right? Like just that pressure, you know, when you're down Pickwick, Gunnersville, where it's pressured, like, and everybody's throwing a two tap or a red eye or whatever, right? Yeah. Like being able to show them something different, I think that's probably.
That is the main thing. That's why the jackhammer, the jackhammer is so strong, you know, or it's probably falling off a bit now, but.
Wait till they see just the that different. There.
Was it? Yeah, maybe Max or even, well, hell, dude, I think them dudes on Chickamauga caught them on a damn spinnerbait. So it's funny how, you know, bass fishing is very cyclical, dude. Like something gets hot and then what was hot that's not gets hot again.
So are you a snell knot?
Not on fluorocarbon, no. Dude, I've tied it on fluoro. It's not because it doesn't work. It's because it's a headache. Like tying a snell on fluorocarbon is obnoxious.
Especially heavy fluorocarbon is what you want. Right?
It's just stiff and coily. I will run a straight shank though.
Have you played with the ringed EWGs at all?
No, I have not.
So this is something Seth does, or he started doing a while ago. So both VMC and Gamagatsu make basically it's a welded ring. Just attach it.
There's no split on it whatsoever.
No, there's no split, so it's a welded.
And, that's kind of nice.
I don't know. There's something about this. I started doing this about 2 or 3 seasons ago, and my hookups flipping grass like 1/2 to 3/4 to 1 ounce, like not punching, but like flipping edges and clumps. It's dynamite, and I think I actually get a few more bites because I think, you know, being on that, it's like a pivot head almost. You get that 100%. Little more like, I don't know. It's.
I'll tell you what, when I fish brush piles down in Florida a lot, we used to throw a lot of like a shaky head, like a mag shaky head, you know, like your classic stand up. And I actually started using and a football head. You take a football head without a skirt and put like a long straight tail on it or something. And I started using a wobble head, the Gambler Wrecking Ball, as my shaky head. But it had that wobble or that, you know, that free floating kind of aspect to it. And I got a ton more bites, dude, but I was dragging it, you know, not fishing, not reeling it in that. And I think that does make a big difference, dude, having that sort of free floatingness to the bait, even in a flipping context. Put that in the
Let's see. Baitman says, when you come to Kentucky Lake to fish.
Oh, I need to get up there, dude. He actually hooked me up with a shizzard, which I have tied up right now. Yeah,
fancy.
It is tied up on my boat.
I saw you eyeing up Buka's shizzard, dude, in the video.
You should have had it in a box that was getting
just laid like, oh, this pile of trash down here. Oh yeah, there's a shizzard.
I'm like, Monkey, what's wrong with you, dude? Like, come on, and then he had the older version. I've never seen the original version of the shizzard like that, dude. He had like the legacy version.
Your video got me thinking. I think Buka would be a good guest to have on this thing.
Buka would be awesome. Dude, I'll tell you what, man, I've
so full disclosure, I've never met Mike Buka before that day. I've had a ton of interactions with him because I always like, that was my first experience with like real swim bait fishing and all that. And so I've talked to him via Facebook a bunch of times, dude, freaking, I love the burrito and all that. And meeting him in person is sort of like, that's what I want to be. Like, he is creative. He is business freaking sensed. Like, you wouldn't believe. He's obsessed with innovation and he loves the fish, and he's created a company that sort of combines all those factors into one. And I don't know about you. Like, I basically, I work for myself. I run my own business. That's hard to do. Like, not only is it hard to do independently, but like, that takes a lot of like personal will to sort of make sure you're addressing all of those principles at once in everything that you do. And it sounds like a small thing, but dude, he really blew me away. He is such a straight and genuine dude. And he's created this sort of niche business and built it in a creative, customer-oriented fashion with cool ass products, dude. Like, I really have a lot of love for that guy.
Baitman's getting back on the stream horse tomorrow night, it sounds like.
Nice.
Talking about Buka.
Yeah. And that's a great way to describe him.
He said dead, but I think he meant deaf.
Yeah, I hope he did. Let's not.
Let's see here.
You should see something. Dude, I do Google text to voice all the time because I'm too lazy to type. And I'm just like, oh, dude, some of the stuff that it says that I said, but I didn't say that, is horrendous. I'm blown away, dude. I'm getting in trouble for it.
It's not voice to text, but like I've got it like text, voicemail to text. So like, right. So I have this message saved to my phone. I don't want to delete yet because my dad called me, asked if I was going fishing this weekend. And it came across as, just wanted to check if you were still Christian this weekend.
Well, I was like, I have to keep that. Over, buddy, dude. We're done with this.
Sean wants to know, what's your favorite gambler easy color?
Probably two of them. The black, blue, green pumpkin. I run it for like brim stuff, you know, dark, stamp, shallow. Yeah. And then, what's the lighter one? Hammond's herring. It's like a pearlish kind of belly with a green back. Perfect for any shad applications, things along those lines.
Nice. Burner worm.
So interesting thing. This is in Florida when I fish tournaments and BFLs, the swimming worm, like a burner worm, was the co-angler's juice. It'll catch you 12 pounds every time you go out, never more, never less, you know. And I always kind of shied away from it because I saw that like sometimes it would catch bigger bags, no doubt. Mm-hmm. But I did shy away from it because it seemed like flipping, burning a big easy, you'd get bigger bites. When I was tournament fishing, it was 5 bigs, right? Yeah. But what I've found is, looking for baits, as I learn more about Gunnersville and the TVA, I'm looking for baits that I can get a lot of bites with and cover water in a variety of different water columns. And with all the grass that grows up on Gunnersville, a swimming worm like the burner worm is a super valuable deal because I can throw it out there, I can reel it, I can throw it in a hole in the grass and just shake it, you know. And I can also do it, like if I got a Texas rig set up that I'm maybe throwing a sick bait on, I can throw that burner worm on there and all of a sudden my Texas rig drag rig becomes a reaction style or a water covering kind of bait. So that kind of versatility is a big deal for somebody who's learning like me up here. So times a year to throw it, since Gunnersville is a little more temperate, a little more normal, and where I'm at in Alabama is like that, really it's from mid to early spring when the grass starts showing up, the fish start reacting and really biting on plastics. And then basically the rest of the year all the way through. In Florida, literally, there's like 3 baits that you need your rod. You need some kind of flipping setup, you need a chatterbait, and you need a swimming worm, maybe a floating frog. But like that's one of those deals where any day of the year in Florida, you can catch fish on that setup.
Yeah, when I was in fishing that Central Regional on Gunnersville a few years back, just about every boat from Alabama was throwing a speed worm.
Yeah.
Not talking about it. And not just like some of them were fishing at shallow, you know, that weird like pennywort mat looking stuff, whatever that is. Some of them were swimming on flats and other people were slow rolling it like deep. I mean, they were
It's super versatile, dude. Yeah. Like it's just and it gets bit. Like even if they don't eat it, like you can get on a flat and it, dink dink. And it's like, okay, I know there's freaking 12 inches up here. You know, it tells you a lot about the area that you're in.
I think you missed it when he kicked the big hard drive under his desk earlier. Right, that's your storage.
I was crawling under the net, trying to store myself. Actually, I got Swimsuit Girl under here. She's keeping me busy and motivated. So
I think you said you have a big hard drive or a big, right? That's where you're keeping.
Yeah, if I could show you on the camera, I have what actually is like 13 terabytes of storage, and that's just in like storage for work, storage for videos, and then in the closet you see right behind me. I back in college, you'd find a lot of computers in the garbage because people would throw stuff out. So I learned a lot about building computers. So I built a little server computer to run backups and stuff because I'm a hoarder from a video standpoint and for work. I need, like, if I lose content or if I lose files, whether it's documents and stuff, I have a problem because the responsibility is on me. So I actually back everything up. All the stuff I have another bunch of stacks back in there that that back things up every night.
Yeah, there's your one nerd question, Chad. Back to fishing.
Yeah, back to fishing. If you do have more nerd questions, shoot me a message. I actually love talking about computer stuff. I'm big into tech because tech, if it weren't for the consumer aspect of a lot of these cameras and stuff that really turned over in the mid to like 2005 to 2010, all of us guys who are doing this YouTube stuff, doing the video content stuff, we wouldn't be able to do it. Because basically all this high-end Hollywood crap that they were doing, we were able to say, hey, I can make stuff too. And all of a sudden we got access to electronics that were affordable and we could do it, dude. So it opened a whole gateway to all this content.
Absolutely. AJ wants to know, fat wake bait or longer bait like a redfin?
I don't know what a redfin is.
A redfin is like a, I guess it's like a bomber wake bait type thing. It was a Ripplin redfin. I forget.
Is that little square bill, like a balsa bee kind of thing?
No, it's like a bomber. It's like a bomber long A. Think of it as a with some ripples in it. So are you more of like a minus one wake bait or more of like a bomber wake bait or neither because you don't throw wake bait?
I don't throw either very much. The shallowest I'll go with a crankbait is usually like 2 or 3 foot. And that's usually kind of a modified square bill, like that Lucky Craft BDS or something. Like I'll rip it off of grass pretty much. That's something I do need to learn about those wake bait fishing more. We did it a bit in Florida because it was perfect for some of that real shallow eelgrass. But I think it's something that could play on gutters as well.
Cotton Cardell is the redfin manufacturer.
Oh, I know that. Yeah. That's actually a good answer for the guy earlier who was looking for a little jerk bait to float up.
Have you played around with the Fritz Side or the OG Slim at all?
Oh, hells yeah. Love them both. The Fritz Side, waxed them on Gunnersville. It's probably on its way out. It's had 2 good years out there on the TVA and around here. But that's a solid bait. It seems like a lot of these flat-sided baits, I'm going to play the millennial. Like I kind of knew it was cool before it was cool. The Sonic Side, the Megabass Sonic Side, a way overpriced, but awesome freaking bait. I actually have one right here. This one's cracked actually though. But this is one of the original flat side baits. You can see it's kind of like that skinnier deal with that little kind of squared bill. We fished that like 4 years ago on Chickamauga and messed them up. And the Fritz Side is very much like that. But I think those styles of baits that are less obtrusive, especially in colder water, but also it seems like cold water fish are a lot like high pressured fish where you need those more subtle presentations. And that's basically what that category that sort of encapsulates those baits. I could care less if she knows how much I spend on fishing gear. It's my money.
A couple questions on frog. What's your go-to frog?
I love me well, this is so old school, coppers, but it ain't called that anymore. I love a live target, dude. Live target. If I want a little bigger profile, JT has me kind of into the what is it, the launch frog. That's freaking, but it's a bigger profile, it's a little different style. But that live target is solid. There's another one. So this blew my mind. I actually, 2 years ago, I smashed a spotted bass on a floating frog, which was one of the coolest bites I've ever been on. And you're going to have to help me with this. Jackal makes a downsized profile frog.
Is that the Kara or the Kara?
Yes,
or?
That's it. The dude, it tears up bad and you can bend the hooks on it. But boy, oh boy, if you have like, I don't know if smallmouth eat a frog, but if you have smaller mouth fish in clearer water and you need something that will like walk really well, that thing kills it, dude. And I could skip it under these bushes during a herring spawn, skip it under the bushes and like two twitches and let it sit. And I would literally see these spots, dude, in like 2 feet of water, just come under it. And I'd be like, oh my God, what am I going to do? And I'd make one little twitch, thing would go like that, and they would go like that. It was awesome. So that's another one. Down on Okeechobee, there's some naughty ones you can do. Another jackal one is that popping frog they make. The
gavacho.
The gavacho, dude. Get some mondo bites. Like, you do miss some fish on it, but it calls them up. And then you got your classics, you know, your Spro, like a red frog, like that red brown one that they got. And the Spro popping frog is a classic that I got as well.
Yeah. The Mississippi River smallies, they'll eat a frog pretty good. And the river, I feel like the river smallies got bigger mouths on them than like I was gonna say, like, one of my favorite ones that they don't make anymore is this, which I feel like is the similar to the coppers, like this, the Evolve Nervous Walker, which is kind of like a target coppers type.
Yeah.
Then I like my old True Tungsten Gen 2 Mad Max frogs.
Dude, that's a classic.
If Baitman's still watching, he would want some of these. But otherwise, yeah, other than that, I mean, like, the Booyah Pad Crasher is probably the best for the money. Catches them. The Terminators, if you want that bigger profile, are pretty good.
I like that color.
And then, I mean, Spros.
You can't beat the Spro, dude. Like, in all reality, like, I hate throwing them because everybody throws them, but
they're
tough to beat, dude. And you can find them anywhere.
And then I guess the Swamp Donkeys are pretty good if they ever make them and actually put them where you can buy them.
I've never heard of that.
The Reaction Ovations?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's just like the stupid Vixen, dude.
Yeah, here's the Tekkle.
My last freaking Vixen. Yeah, the old Tekkles.
Which is the same as the, here's the, right there they are. Right, same thing. Tekkle and Swamp Donkey are the same thing.
You know who actually makes a good one, too, is Savage Gear. My buddy Jacob Wall works with Savage Gear, and like he gave me, I want to say it's like a dual chamber or something like that, but it's got this little pop on it. Like, it's not like your standard wide popper. It's got just like a fingertip or like a pinky tip size popper on it. So it walks like a freaking floating frog, like a normal one, but it's got just the slightest amount of spit as well as like stop to it. And I actually caught them on the headwaters really well on that. Now, granted, headwaters, they freaking bite, but I was a little surprised by the action on it. Like, it has a kind of a unique little pop and walk to it, which I'm big into. What the hell is that bait? I have one tied on for tomorrow for the herring spawn. The gunfish, you know, like that spook sort of popper sort of fusion. It reminded me a lot of that, where you get that walking action, but there's a slight little spit or sort of like drag to it because it's pushing water.
Since you said gunfish, dang it! Do you ever have treble hooks tangle?
Never. Them and freaking rod guys. Nice.
Here's the gunfish. But you said you like the Vixens.
Oh, dude, don't show. Dude, put it away. I broke one in half on my stupid trolling motor because I'm a clown, and then I had one more, and they were chomping it on headwaters. Like, I think it was 2 years ago. Like, dude, it was dumb. You know how it gets with that bait. Like, it's like dong dong doosh.
Like when they chew the paint off it, like
that's what mine looked like until this 6-pounder broke me off a 40-pound braid, which I still don't know how that happened. So there's a freaking 6-pounder in headwater swimming around with my freaking Vixen. Great fish care. Nice job, Mike.
I've only got like 10 of them in this box. But. So here's a story. So you know who TK Stanley, Tackle Craft?
Yeah.
I had him on the stream and he showed me he's got under his table, he's got a box of unpainted original Vixen clear bodies. I bet you if he didn't, he had like 20 or 30 of them in there.
Really?
And I was like,
I was down, you know, JT Kenny, right?
Yeah.
So I was down filming JT because I run a bunch of his social media and, or I shoot a bunch of his content. And I'm hanging out with JT and he's like, hey, you want to see something cool? I'm like, hell yeah, I always want to see something cool. So he pulls out a Vixen and I'm like, oh, that's cool. It's a Vixen. He's like, no, 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 no. So I guess Andre gave him one of the first prototype Vixens mm-hmm. and there's like three of them. So he still has one of the original like three or two freaking prototype Vixens and he still has it. Like he didn't break it. Dude, I would have lost that like 10 years ago. Yeah, it's one of the original. It's all beat the piss and what, but it still goes dong dong. You know, like it's still works like it used to.
Nice, yeah. Those are people I was like, oh, have you tried this top one? It's like, no, I pretty much.
I'm good, thanks. I'm
good. Yeah. I just keep throwing these Vixens that I don't been pretty fortunate to. I mean, that's the thing is like I throw them on 40 pound braids. Sometimes I'll put like a 20 pound, you know, 10 inch leader on them or something like that. But just you don't. I mean. They're not loser proof, but they're, I mean,
I just don't get like they have a cool action to them. Don't get me wrong, but they wash, you know, I mean, they do this dong dong, but mm-hmm. they kind of slosh, I guess. It's not like this super tight, but dude, the fish eat it up. Like they come to it. There's something about it that just, he nailed it when he did those, man.
Yeah, and supposedly the tackles are the same, and supposedly the new ones are the same. But even the new ones, you can't get. I mean,
you can't get anything right now.
Yeah,
lower units, like, freaking Vixens, anything.
But let's face it; it was hard to get Vixens before COVID. So we're not.
Yeah, just, no, that's true. That is true.
But, yeah, and the tackle kick knocker is the same, but you can't get those either.
Yeah,
so it's like, cool. Well, we're right at about 2 hours. I don't know, probably doesn't feel like we talked bassin for 2 hours, but we did. I feel like we got through the questions that I saw. So glad that you were able to answer a bunch of people's questions. We do a lot of fan interaction here, so that was kind of cool. I don't know what else is going on. You got any exciting things coming up on the channel, Mikey?
You know, I'm going to do a walkthrough of the new boat. Like I said, once I get kind of totally comfortable with it, I have some Florida content. I had to go to Florida for a wedding with a swimsuit girl. And my one condition was if I'm going to a wedding for 3 days, I'm going fishing for 3 days. So I went down there and whacked on some post-spawn bigs. So stay tuned for that. But I got a bunch of videos coming. I've been killing it on a Ned, go figure. And trying to do some different stuff with it. So I got kind of what I would call some sort of interesting takes on rethinking a Ned coming up. But really, dude, the thing that I do with my channel, whether it's good or not, it's really sort of an organic experience of I'm going fishing, I learn something, and I try to share it, which isn't the best thing. I probably should go find good clickbait, high SEO topics and post them, but it's not what I do. So just stay tuned because as the season changes and as we sort of get into ledge season and go through the seasons, I try to keep up the content with that and show you what I'm catching fish on, what I'm learning, as well as hanging out with the dog who's snoring.
I mean, we really know that everybody's there for bog, right? I mean,
they are, dude, because I'm not that fun. I can tell you that much. But that's about it, dude. I appreciate anybody who wants to subscribe and check that stuff out. And I appreciate you having me on, though. It's been kind of a fun conversation, dude.
Super fun. And I'm excited to later, probably this weekend, to get my first open water tournament video out in a minute. So it's kind of fun to like sit down and actually, you know, edit some open water content.
Knock the dust off of Premiere, dude.
I'm more of a DaVinci Resolve guy, but sure. Cool. So if you guys came in late, I think we had a bunch of good knowledge dropped. We answered a lot of questions. You can go back and catch the replay, whether you're watching on Facebook or YouTube. Otherwise, you can download the audio version. Just search Hella Bass in your favorite podcast app. Support the companies that are supporting us. Make sure you go out and check out some of Mikey's content. Check out a few of his videos. See if it's your bag. And you'll probably find some stuff. He's definitely more educational. If you like the vibe here, you'll like the vibe over there. So appreciate you coming on, Mikey.
Hey, dude, I appreciate it. Let's do it again.
Yeah, absolutely. As always, here to help you guys catch more big bass and suck less.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
As always, thanks to all of you that hung in till the end of this podcast. This has been another episode of Hellebass Bass Fishing Podcast Experience. Please consider sharing this with any of your bassin' buddies and friends. This is the best way for podcasts to grow is through word of mouth. Also, don't forget to search Hellebass on Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, or just about anywhere else so that we can connect in more ways. As always, here to help you catch more bass and suck less.